Okay. Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the June 12th, 2026 Santa Ana Regional Water Quality Control Board meeting here at the offices of the Inland Empire Utility Agency. We are meeting in person and via Zoom, and this meeting is being webcasted and recorded. For those who have completed a virtual speaking card for this Zoom meeting, you will be on mute and your camera turned off until it is your turn to speak. The host will then unmute you and ask you to turn on your camera, if you have one. When you are done speaking, you will be placed on mute and your camera turned off. You will remain in the Zoom meeting or exit the meeting. And for people who only want to listen or watch the meeting, the board's customary website is available. And now before we go with our board member introductions, I'd like to ask that Steve Eli, who's one of the directors of the Inland Empire Utility Agency, would like to make some welcoming remarks.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
You mean that? All right, we're good. I'm not used to being on this side. I'm used to being there. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Welcome to Chino, my home district, and our headquarters today. We really appreciate you coming out to Chino, and you know, I know the regional board has they like to code all over the district, and we really appreciate that. We really appreciate you all being here. I know some of you for many years. We're very proud of our facility here as well as what we do here at Inland Empire Utilities Agency, and I know you'll hear about it soon, but I just wanted to welcome you on behalf of the entire board. I'm currently president of the board, and welcome to my district. So thank you all for being here. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Thank you, Director Eli. And now I'd like to ask the board members to introduce themselves, beginning with Board Member Lopez.
Good morning. My name is Al Lopez. I am the former mayor and councilman, City of Corona, and also a longtime board member at Western Municipal Water District in Riverside County. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. Letitia Clark from the great city of Tustin. Thanks for having us.
Good morning, everyone. I think I'm on. Good morning, everyone. Chris Murray from the city of Anaheim. Good morning.
Bill Rue from the city of Montclair.
Good morning, everyone. Gloria Alvarado, resident of the city of Santa Ana.
And my name is John Scandura. I'm board chair. I live in Huntington Beach, but I grew up here in the Inland Empire, not very far away from here in Ontario. My mother, who turns 92 next month, also grew up right here in Chino on a farm where the 60 freeway currently intersects with Euclid Avenue. And I'm very pleased to see that we have all six of our board members present today. So before we begin, I would like to announce there has been a change to the order of the agenda items. Item 10 will now be heard after item 2, that's the public forum, and then before item 3. So our next item is the public forum, and we welcome hearing from the public at this meeting. Any person wishing to speak should have submitted a speaker request, and for those items listed on today's agenda, you will make your comments at the time the item is being considered. If you wish to speak on an item that is not on the agenda, has not been scheduled to appear on a future agenda, and is not otherwise pending before the board, you may speak now before the public forum, and the comments will be limited to 3 minutes. We remind members of the public that the tentative MS4 regional permit is scheduled for a public hearing on July 24th, and any questions related to the permit should be saved for that hearing. Our executive officer now has some details on a public notice that was issued yesterday.
Thank you, Chair Scandura. Good morning. On June 11th, the public comment period for the tentative MS4 regional permit was extended from June 19 to July 20. A public hearing on July 24 will proceed, at which comments will be received and considered by the board. The board intends to close the hearing at the conclusion of the meeting on July 24 and will consider adoption of the permit at a meeting on August 21st after reviewing all comments received. Thank you.
And then, Councilor, did you want to add anything?
I just wanted to remind our commenters that the regional MS4 permit has not been noticed for discussion at today's meeting, and consequently, there are interested stakeholders who are not present here today to participate in any such discussions. I therefore want to reiterate what the executive officer just said, that any commenter should refrain from making comments on the pending MS4 permit during today's meeting in accordance with the Administrative Procedure Act. And with that, I will advise that if we do receive any comments on the pending MS4, that the board and staff abstain from providing any responses to such comments today. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Council. And our next item is the public forum, but before we do that, I'd like to introduce our new board secretary, Vanessa Fuerte. She's actually filling in for Jessica Boehner, who's on maternity leave. And so thank you, Vanessa, for filling in for her, and we look forward to working with you these next few months. So do we have any speakers?
Yes, we do have speakers. Ryan Kearns.
Good morning, Chair Scandura and members of the board. My name is Ryan Kearns, and I'm the Chief of Watershed Protection for the Riverside County Flood Control and Water Conservation District. I want to thank both Eric and the board for providing an extension of the comment period, and I also want to reiterate the requests that will later be made by our elected officials and by my colleagues. Over the past year, the board has been working with our staff and stakeholders to complete several basin plan amendments, including the Lake Elsinore and Canyon Lake TMDL, as well as the Middle Santa Ana River Bacteria TMDL. Those efforts involved more than 20 stakeholder groups, including MS4 permittees, agricultural interests, water districts, environmental organizations, and board staff. Together, we participated in over 74 stakeholder meetings to make sure we got those TMDLs right. Board staff worked diligently to ensure all perspectives were heard before those adoption hearings. As a result, those hearings went smoothly, and I believe we can achieve the same outcome with this permit. The turnout today reflects the importance of this permit and the value of continued dialogue. While there are several issues remaining to be resolved, I remain optimistic. We've had some great conversations with Eric and board staff earlier this week that reinforces my belief that we can work on these issues together. We are asking the board to direct staff to engage in a collaborative dialogue over the coming months to refine the permit before it is brought forward to adoption. Today, we are asking that you postpone the July 24th board meeting and direct staff to engage in that dialogue. We have not had the opportunity to review this permit in over 2 years. Staff have not provided red lines up until May 5th, so we have not had the opportunity to take a look at this permit. So it's just not been transparent. There's a lack of communication, and we really need that communication now, which is why we're asking to delay the hearing. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And Vanessa, I forgot to ask, how many speakers do we have?
We have over 20 speakers.
Okay. Great. Our next speaker.
Next speaker is Anna Gutierrez.
Good morning, Board. My name is Anna Gutierrez, as a community member of the City of Ontario. I'm here to speak on the MS permit as community member who pay for utilities. I am concerned about the lack of community involvement in this process. We're asking today for an extension to comment on the proposal. We need documents to be accessible in Spanish and other languages, and for this board and staff to do community meetings to get public input. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Next speaker, we have Maria Velasquez.
Good Good morning. Can I have someone in Spanish, please?
We'll have one in July. Yeah, good morning. We don't have a Spanish translator at this meeting. We've scheduled a Spanish translator for the hearing in July, on July 24th.
Okay, then. I'm going to try my best as I can. I'm here today. I'm coming from Rialto, California. Hope you guys understand me. I'm coming from Rialto, California, and I'm here today because we've been having so many problems with the water. It doesn't taste really good. It tastes so bad. And also, we receive at home the mails from the water district, the water departments, where they only tell us that the prices are going up and up and up and up, but they never let us know that you guys are having a meeting, that we're doing something, or even like right now, that you guys doesn't have any explanation, or that you guys tell us that something is going on the district, sorry, that is gonna affect the community. And sometimes we don't know what to do. We just have to accept that we're paying a lot more money for the bills, and we don't really get that help for the community. And there's a lot of community like me that we don't really understand English, we don't really speak English, and we need a lot of help on that side. So I'm just here. I really wish you guys have someone in Spanish that, because we're having some more people with me, and they don't speak really good English either. So we really need you guys help us on understanding all these different types of business, and mostly because it benefits for the community. It's not just people that is on the offices sitting like right here, like you guys, that you know everything, but people like us from the community, we need a lot more help. We need to be in touch with you guys, and we have to have someone to help us, like, wide open, so we can get everything that we need. Thank you. Have you understood? Thank you.
Thank you for coming up.
If there are any responses from staff or from the board that are unrelated to the MS4 comment, you may address the comment.
Yeah, I'd like to go ahead and respond to that comment. I regret that we don't have a translator here today. I'd like to reiterate that related to the MS4 permit, we will have a translator at the meeting in July. More importantly, we have Spanish translation and other language translation capabilities on staff. I've left a stack of my business cards at the front. These sorts of issues should be directed to myself and to staff, not to the board directly. We'd be happy to help you. Please grab a card, and we will work with you in whatever language you'd prefer to use. Thank you.
Next speaker, we have Karen Spiegel.
Good morning, Chair and members of the board. My name is Karen Spiegel, and I'm the chair of the Riverside County Board of Supervisors. I'm here also to request that the July 4th, 24th hearing be rescheduled to allow time for meaningful collaboration with staff on the regional stormwater permit. First, I want to thank the board and the staff for agreeing to hold a series of staff-level workshops to help refine regional stormwater permit and for extending the public comment or the comment period for 30 days. That is appreciated. Those commitments were important given the significance of the permit, which regulates the activities of 60 cities in three counties affecting more than 7 million residents and 800,000 businesses. With impacts of this scale, it's important to get it right. Cities and counties face challenges providing services. Congress understood that. That is why state and federal law provide this board with the unique authority and responsibility to balance environmental goals with the practical realities facing local governments. As an example of why the flexibility is important, earlier this week, our county began the budget hearing process. The draft county budget proposes a $66 million deficit spending. On top of that, I heard requests from departments asking for $700 million additional service needs that obviously we don't have in the reserves or funding to support. Don't get me wrong, we need to continuously improve environmental procedures, but in a way that allows time and flexibility to succeed. During the last board hearing, both Gary Brown and Jason Yulee noted that it was important to take the time to get this permit right. We all agreed. Up until the revised permit was released, we did not hear from staff for 15 months. We respectfully requested the board direct staff to engage in a more collaborative dialogue before bringing the permit forward for adoption. To facilitate the collaboration, and given the permit size, cost, and long-term implications, we asked the July 4th hearing be rescheduled. The hearing date was announced on short notice, and key staff are unavailable due to existing commitments. Additional time will allow us to collaborate with staff, work out the remaining issues, and work towards the collaborative win that is, this region is known for. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Spiegel.
Next speaker, we have Don Rowe.
Good morning, Chair and members of the board. My name is Don Rao, and I'm the chairman of the Board of San Bernardino County Board of Supervisors. And I thank you for the opportunity to be here today to address your board. To begin with, I would like to thank the regional board staff for yesterday afternoon's notice that the permittee comment period has been extended 30 days. We appreciate staff's responsiveness to our concerns regarding the compressed time period. We all agree that water quality is a priority, and that we need to act collaboratively to create the tentative order that is both effective and attainable. To understand that path forward, we need to acknowledge how we arrived here. In September of 2024, permittees from San Bernardino County, Orange, and Riverside counties came before you to discuss the tentative order. Following that board hearing, we got off to a great start with six initial workshops with board staff. After that, there has been virtually no dialogue about the permit since March of 2025. And then on June 4th, we received the regional board's 440-page response to the comments that the permittees had submitted 2 years ago. Under the original schedule, that left permittees just 15 days to review hundreds of pages of responses prior to the June 19th deadline. All the while, permittees were already rushing to evaluate the significant new language, requirements, and appendices of the revised TO. The new 30-day extension is much appreciated, but it is only beneficial if we use the time to work together. For these reasons, I respectfully request to be given the full 90-day comment period that the permittees were told by board staff that they would receive as late as December 2025. Second, we will commit to meeting weekly with board staff to work collaboratively and collectively towards equitable solutions. This will streamline the process going forward to help resolve issues and to achieve consensus before the revised TO comes back to the board for action. With meaningful dialogue, the regional board and the permittees can produce a permit that supports water quality and the needs of our citizens, including our many disadvantaged communities. And I respectfully thank you for your consideration on the extension. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Rowe.
Next speaker, we have Joe Bala Jr.
Good morning, Honorable Chair Scandura and the board. It's an honor to be here. I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak a few words. Like my chair, I want to thank you for the action of extending the comment period for 30 days. It's very, very much appreciated. This extra time is critical for many of the communities that we represent that face many severe economic challenges. And one of the things about many of our cities in the county, many of our towns are very economically disadvantaged. Many of them have challenges with revenue streams. So this is a big concern for us, and especially when mandates are given that it's tough for our cities. Our district has a significant number of disadvantaged communities in the East Valley, making it especially important for local and regional government bodies to understand the impact of major regulatory decisions before they are finalized. One of the concerns is the amount of meaningful review time available for local agencies. So if you could give us more time, that would be very much appreciated. The revised tentative order was released on May 5th, and the agencies were advised that response to the comments would follow short thereafter. But those responses were not reached until July or June 4th, approximately 30 days later. As a result, roughly two-thirds of the comment period has elapsed before agencies received the information necessary to understand how prior concerns were addressed. Even with the new 30-day extension, there is a significant amount of work that needs to be done to understand and provide the thoughtful comments to the revised tentative order. That is especially true for communities with fewer resources who feel that the greatest impacts when implementation challenges are not fully understood before requirements are adopted. As I reiterated before, many, many of our cities are financially strapped, have difficult challenges, and revenue streams will be much difficult. This is why sufficient review time is just so important. For those reasons, I respectfully support and request and grant the permittees the full 90-day comment period. I also support the comments of our chair for the County Board of Supervisors, Chair Rao, who is up here. And as a vice chair, I know that we need to work together and use this time to the fullest to ensure that the final permit is truly collaborative and product. On behalf of the entire County Board of Supervisors, along with my colleague, I want to thank you for your time and consideration. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Supervisor.
Next speaker, we have Aquanita Warren.
Good morning, all, to members of this great board. I've followed you carefully because this particular item has become something that we all should be following. It impacts our communities in such a big way. I am Fontana Mayor Aquanita Warren. I want to thank you for the opportunity to address you today. Fontana is one of the fastest growing cities in San Bernardino County, in the state and in the nation. We are actively working to address the regional housing shortage and deliver infrastructure improvements to meet the demands of our expanding community. The scope of the revised tentative order is substantial, with far-reaching implications for housing development and infrastructure across our communities. Moreover, our city is continuing to work on making sure that we address the generational challenges involving the extensive number of disadvantaged communities in Fontana, as defined under SB 535 guidelines. The tentative order carries potentially serious impacts to those disadvantaged communities, which cover significant portions of southern, central, and southwestern Fontana. We've spent so much in terms of investments to upgrade that part of our community to make sure that everyone is fairly treated. Our staff, legal counsel, and financial department need adequate time to fully analyze those implications and provide the board with comments that are informed and specific. While the 30-day extension is greatly appreciated, the original commitment from staff in December was a 90-day comment period. I respectfully ask the board to honor that commitment, given the significant implications this has for housing, infrastructure, and our disadvantaged communities. I urge the board to direct staff to engage with permittees, including my city, in weekly collaborative dialogue to work through these issues together. As Supervisor Rao, or Chair Rao, noted, meaningful discussion and dialogue with regional board staff is crucial for finalizing an effective revised tentative order. We want to make sure we can back up your order. But to do that, we need you to back us up. So thank you.
Thank you, Mayor.
Next speaker, Helen Tran.
Good morning, Chair Scandura and members of the board. I am Mayor Helen Tran with the City of San Bernardino, serving 226,000 residents. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. I'd like to start by acknowledging and thanking the regional board staff for extending the permittee comment period by 30 days to July 20th. The 30-day extension is a step in the right direction, and we appreciate that. But extensions alone don't move us forward. Collaboration does. However, since March 2025, meaningful dialogue has been largely absent from this process. The revised tentative order and a 440-page response to comments arrived within weeks of the original deadline after a two-year period, which many of my colleagues before me spoke on. Water quality is personal to our residents, and they deserve a permit built through a real collaboration and not rushed timelines. Today, we come before you with two requests to help ensure that this permit works for the cities and people we serve and impact. First, we ask for the comment period to be extended to the 90 days that staff committed to permittees back in December. Second, we ask that the board direct staff to meet with the permittees weekly. The early workshops produce meaningful progress, and that kind of continued collaboration is essential to developing a permit that protects water quality and remains workable for our disadvantaged communities we serve. We are committed to having our staff work closely with regional board staff to keep this process collaborative. Together, these two requests create the conditions for a tentative order that this board, the permittees, and the public can support with confidence. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor.
Next speaker, we have Brian Johns.
Is Ryan in the room or online?
Brian? Brian Johns?
Going once, going twice. Next speaker.
Carlos Zamano.
Good morning. My name is Carlos Zamano. I've been a licensed civil engineer for 27 years. I am the city manager for the city of Highland. I appreciate the opportunity to address the board today on behalf of the city council, Highland City Council. First, I would like to thank the board and staff for extending the comment period and providing additional time for review. This permit, more than 60 permittees across Riverside, Orange, and San Bernardino counties, requiring significant coordination as agencies evaluate the revised tentative order, the board's response to comments, and new permit requirements. Throughout the process, permittees have emphasized the importance of having sufficient time to review the revised materials and opportunity to discuss remaining concerns with board staff. However, there has been no substantive permit workshops or collaborative discussions between permittees and board staff since March of 2025. For these reasons, the full 90-day review period is necessary, as you've discussed from many of the other speakers. We also respectfully request that the board direct staff to engage in regular meetings or discussions with agencies during the review period. Those discussions would allow agencies and board staff to productively work through concerns collaboratively, discuss specific permit provisions and revisions, and create a more efficient process. Ultimately, we believe engagement between board staff and agencies will lead to a better final permit by all parties. Many local agencies have dedicated significant staff resources to participating today, and we would benefit from hearing the board's perspective on the proposed schedule and path forward. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Before the next speaker, I'd just like to reiterate that pursuant to the APA, as codified in the government code, comments related to the MS4, which is pending for a July 24th hearing, should be saved for that hearing and not be brought up today. Thank you.
Next speaker, we have Ryan Kearns.
I think Ryan already spoke. And you only got one bite at the apple.
Bianco Velasco.
Good morning, Chair and members of the board. My name is Bianca Velasco, and I'm the Assistant Director of the San Bernardino County Department of Public Works. Thank you, first of all, for allowing me to speak today. I'd like to thank the board and staff for extending the comment period and providing additional time for review. We appreciate the board's willingness to recognize the concerns raised by local agencies and permittees regarding the review timeline. Many agencies plan their review efforts based on the understanding that a 90-day review period would be provided for the revised tentative order. That additional review time is important because the requirements contained in the tentative order carry significant implications for the agencies responsible for implementing them. While the additional time is helpful, agencies still need the full 90-day review period to adequately evaluate those requirements and the board's responses to comments. We also respectfully request that the board direct staff to engage in regular discussions and meetings with agencies during that time. Those discussions would provide an opportunity to work through remaining concerns collaboratively and help ensure agencies can provide the most informed feedback possible. For those reasons, San Bernardino County continues to support providing the full 90-day review period before the permit is considered for adoption. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Next speaker, we have Harold Zamora.
Good morning, Chair, members of the board. My name is Harold Zamora. I'm the Assistant City Engineer for the City of Moreno Valley. I just echo what my colleagues are saying, and I just want to bring up two points that has not been said. As many have said, collaboration. That's the biggest component here. And collaboration starts with trust. And in December, we were told we were going to get a 90-day review period. We now have a 30-day review period. That kind of breaks down the collaboration aspect of it. And so for that reason, I think the colleagues and myself were here asking that we start on the right foot. And then secondly, as you know, and as they mentioned, it's several months since we've had any conversation with the Water Board. Understandably, there's huge implications to community, to disadvantaged communities that we have in the City of Moreno Valley as well. And there's also a lot of conversations that had to be had with our elected officials. Being that it's summer, I know that there's never good timing, but right now a lot of cities like ours, we're in our summer recess starting next week. So this kind of limits our ability to have conversations with our elected officials to bounce some of the ideas off of them to get their input. And so with that, the City of Moreno Valley asks that you respectfully extend the period for 90 days, allow us an opportunity to collaborate with our internal staff as the staff has done themselves. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And just as a matter of clarification, the original comment period was 45 days. It's now been extended to 76 days. Next speaker.
Next speaker is Chris Bland.
Good morning, Chair Scandura, members of the board. My name is Christopher Bland. I am the Stormwater Program Manager for San Bernardino County Stormwater Program. I am the principal permittee, represent the Flood Control District, San Bernardino County, and the 16 cities. I just want to thank you guys for allowing us to come up and speak about this and mimic the same asks that we do get to work with board staff, hopefully on a weekly basis. Like I said, we've been working very closely with Eric and staff, and we hope to continue this good collaboration. So thank you, board members, and you guys have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next speaker is Ismael Gonzalez.
Hello, good morning, board members, everybody here, and everybody tuning in. My name is Ismael Gonzalez. I'm a resident of Moreno Valley. I'm here in support and solidarity with the Center for Community Action and Environmental Justice, as well as the Sierra Club. I want to echo a lot of the concern that many of the speakers have had, have expressed before me. It is concerning, with all due respect, to the limitations on what we can speak about. The concern is the MS4 permit. It is concerning to see supervisors, mayors, leaders of agencies here express the same concern that I do, that I have with CCAJ and the Sierra Club. There needs to be more time to review, more time to collaborate with the agencies involved, with all the stakeholders dealing with this permit. Like the supervisor before me said, this involves and relates to millions of people, multiple counties. It is only right that there is more time to consider what is in this permit, how it affects the tax payers, the rate payers, constituents, and the businesses in this area. Monitoring and reporting are especially important because they help the public understand whether water quality protections are working. I also want to bring up the topic of accessibility. Millions of people are going to be affected by this permit. It is only right that the considerations and the collaborations involved are accessible by different languages, by different localities. We've already had a couple of speakers come up and ask for translators. It is unfortunate that we're not able to hear them in their full thought process. I understand that translators will be provided at the next meeting for this permit, but considering that there are so many speakers with this same concern, they should be able to express themselves freely today. With that being said, I respectfully ask this body to extend the time for consideration, to widen the accessibility to all the residents and stakeholders involved. And thank you so much for this time. Have a good morning. Thank you.
I will make a brief comment just to respond to that. In our agenda advisements, both in English and in Spanish, they go out for each agenda. At page 4 or somewhere around page 4 at the back of it, there is instructions there if there's any language that needs to be requested or interpretation services and the procedure and process to do that. So for those in attendance today, if this may be your first meeting, or if not, if you're not aware of this, please refer to the language section in the agenda, which goes out for every meeting in advance of the meeting, at least 10 days. And it's produced in English and in Spanish. And if there's any requests for additional language, please let us know within the time frame so that we can get that done. Thank you.
Thank you, Council. Our next speaker.
Next speaker is Tatiana Flores.
Good morning, Board. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Tatiana Flores, and I'm an organizer with the Center for Community Action and Environmental Justice, as well as a Moreno Valley resident. And so I am here to speak in support of extending the public comment period on the proposed MS4 permit. Throughout my time with CCAJ, this process, much like the process that cities and counties take, often involves, you know, complex technical, legal, and environmental materials that require careful review. Community members deserve enough time to understand what is being proposed, how it may affect local waterways, and what it could mean for neighborhoods already facing pollution, flooding, and environmental burdens. I have seen that when cities and counties provide enough time to review documents, people are able to better understand what is in store for their communities for years to come and contribute meaningfully to the conversation. I wanted to address something that was just mentioned about agendas being in Spanish as well, but it is important that documentation is actually also in Spanish so community members can review that as well. Communities have waited years for meaningful improvements in water quality, and residents want to ensure that any final action moves protections forward in a clear, transparent, and accountable way. And that requires a process where the public has a real opportunity to actually review the materials, ask questions, and provide informed input. Without additional time, many residents and community organizations will not be able to fully participate, which is especially concerning for communities that are most directly affected by water pollution and environmental harm.
Public participation should be meaningful, accessible, and inclusive, not rushed. So I respectfully urge the board to extend the public comment deadline and provide additional opportunities for community engagement, which has been expressed by other stakeholders here today. An extension will allow residents, community organizations, and technical experts to better evaluate the proposed action and offer recommendations that strengthen those protections for water quality, public health, and local communities. I would even suggest having a translator interpreter at every meeting if possible. You never know if you'll need it. And like we saw here today, it would have been a good opportunity to have one. And thank you for your consideration.
Thank you.
Next speaker, we have Claudia Guavas.
Hola, muy buenos días, miembros de la mesa directiva. Quisiera intérprete, pero acabamos de escuchar que no lo tendremos hasta el mes de julio. Entonces, pues diré mi speech en español. Perdón. Mi nombre es Claudia Cuevas y soy organizadora del Centro Comunitario de Acción y Justicia Ambiental. Estamos aquí el día de hoy para hablar sobre el permiso de la MS4. Tememos que aún necesario este permiso, la comunidad no sea involucrada en este proceso y eso es alarmante. Necesitamos una extensión de comentario público para revisar bien lo que está proponiendo. Todos tenemos el derecho a agua limpia y por eso necesitamos ser parte de este proceso y que el personal tenga más juntas comunitarias en nuestro idioma, en español. Gracias.
Thank you.
Next speaker, we have Luz Maria Hernandez.
Buenos días, mi nombre es Luz María Hernández. Sorry, no speak English. Yo estoy aquí solamente para pedirles que nos involucren más a la comunidad hispanohablante, porque hay veces que no tenemos tanto acceso a la información sobre los cambios que hay del agua. Entonces, a mí me preocupa mucho el agua que yo consumo, la calidad del agua con la que yo estoy consumiendo diariamente, y también pidiendo a que nos hagan la extensión de la MS4, que sea más extensa para poder nosotros tener más información sobre esto. Muchas gracias y disculpe.
Thank you.
Next speaker, we have Marciala Contreras.
Buenos días, señores de la mesa directiva. Mi nombre es Marisela Contreras, de la comunidad de Ontario. Estamos aquí.
Good morning, my name is Marisela Contreras. I'm coming from Ontario community.
Estamos aquí pidiendo más tiempo para revisar la propuesta del permiso de la MS4.
We're here asking for more time for the permit MS4.
La comunidad no se ha involucrado. No tenemos accesibilidad en español.
The community has not been involucrated. We have no accessibility in Spanish.
Y necesitamos una extensión de 30 días.
And we need an extension for another 30 days.
Para estudiar la propuesta.
To study the proposal.
Gracias por escuchar nuestras peticiones.
And thank you so much for hearing our petitions.
Miembros de la mesa directiva.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Thank you.
Dios les bendiga.
Thank you for coming up.
Next speaker, we have James Fortuna.
Good morning, Chair Scandura, honorable members of the board. My name is James Fortuna. I am with the County of Orange. I manage the North OC Watershed Management Area, and I represent the Orange County Stormwater Program, and for the Santa Ana region, that's 26 cities, as well as the county itself and the Orange County Flood Control District. I can keep my remarks brief because there's been a lot of speakers here, but I just want to thank the board for the extension that was granted yesterday. We're still digesting it as we are reviewing all the information that's been provided and the response to comments last week. So I would just say we would agree that time for more engaged back and forth conversations with region board staff on the remaining key issues in the permit would be highly beneficial. In closing, I did want to thank the board members and the regional board staff too for our long history of a collaboration on water quality priorities across North Orange County. We're very proud of our program and the work we do with you all as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next speaker, we have Steve Strupik.
Good morning, Chair Skindura and members of the board. My name is Steve Strapak. I'm the Assistant City Engineer for the City of Menifee, representing all departments there, as well as the mayor and city manager. And I'm here to express our concern and hope and request for an extension as well, along with the other speakers. Also, we request, as others have done so before me, that a collaborative approach to this permit. The city is very concerned about spending money in the most appropriate way possible. As you know, we're all public employees, and as such, we're stewards of the public dollars. We want to spend our money as effectively as possible and get the best water treatment and water quality that we can for the best price. We don't want to overspend money where we don't have to, since money is very tight. We're a smaller city, only 120,000 people, and we're mostly homeowners right now. We're hoping to build that. One of the important things we can do with transparency and more collaboration with the board is come up with more effective policies and procedures within the permit itself. I'll give you an example. Sometimes we manage the pavement. One of the jobs I have is managing all the streets within the city. And we have a pavement management program where we evaluate every single street and how we should spend the dollars to pave it for the maximum effect for the people. That way, no dollar is wasted, and we get the best street system we possibly can for the money allocated to us. So as such, as stewards, we all request from the City of Menifee that sort of process too. As city employees, we have the best knowledge of what's going on in the city, the best, most cost-effective treatment methods, and how to implement those in our city. So that's why people are asking for this transparency and for this opportunity to work with staff on the different aspects of the permit. And I know the current permit we're working on is very long in the tooth. I think it's 15 or 16 years old at this point, so there is quite a bit of pressure to get a new permit in place. But I would hate to rush and have a permit that is ineffective from a cost perspective as well as water quality that doesn't do what we all want it to do. As a new grandfather, I want my kids to be able to play in the Santa Ana River without worrying about pesticides, herbicides, and runoff goop, especially at the beach and other areas. So with that, we respectfully ask for an extension and that you ask the staff to work collaboratively with all members. Thank you.
Thank you, and congratulations on your grandchild. Next speaker.
Next speaker, we have Nathan Marlinsky.
Good morning, Chairman Skindura, members of the board, and Executive Officer Lindbergh. My name is Nathan Marlinsky, representing the City of Chino's Public Works Department. I want to begin by welcoming the board to the beautiful city of Chino. I would also like to thank the board for their tremendous multi-year effort to modernize and consolidate the Region 8 MS4 framework. We share your commitment to protecting the Santa Ana River watershed and achieving meaningful water quality standards. It is our commitment to protecting the Santa Ana River watershed that motivates Chino's request to extend the public comment period to ensure that the final adopted permit is both legally defensible and operationally practical. I am here today to respectfully request an extension to the current public comment deadline. As you know, the regional MS4 permit is the first of its kind for our watershed, consolidating three completely separate decade-old programs into one unified mandate. The redline version released on May 5th contains substantial, complex structural updates and the current comment period is simply not enough time for our technical teams to adequately analyze how these sweeping text revisions interlock across diverse jurisdictions from coastal Orange County to the fast-growing Inland Empire. A brief extension will not derail this process. Rather, it ensures that the historic permit that is ultimately adopted is built on robust and collaborative partnership. We respectfully request that you extend the comment window and adjust the adoption hearing accordingly. Thank you for your time and your consideration.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Next speaker, we have John Pons-Kazemi.
Good morning, Chair Scandura. My name is John Pons-Kazemi, city engineer for the City of Paris. Excuse me. I also would like to echo our representatives, my colleagues' concern that they brought up. We do need more time to review this order. We recently received the response comments, and we want to analyze and see the feasibility and the costs associated with implementing this program. We have limited resources, limited funds, so we want to make sure we can apply and permit the order. Thank you so much.
Thank you again. Next speaker.
Next speaker, we have Mayor Phil Duper.
Well, I was going to say good morning, Chair, but he stepped out for a second.
He will be addressing the board and Vice Chair Alvarado. Thank you.
Good morning, he's back now. Good morning, Chair, Vice Chair, and esteemed members of the board. Thank you for this opportunity. My name is Phil Duper, and I am the current mayor of the city of Loma Linda. If you don't know, Loma Linda is one of the original blue zones in the world. We are a very environmentally and health-conscious community with 7 world-class hospitals, 2 of which are VA facilities, and then obviously our world-class children's hospital. Unfortunately, we are entering our second year in a deficit budget. We are experiencing significant revenue challenges, which also affects the businesses, the healthcare industry, and everybody else in our community. I appreciate the board's decision to extend the comment period and provide local agencies with the additional time to review the revised tentative order. As you know, July 2024, local agencies submitted more than 100 pages of detailed comments and red lines. However, the regional board's response to those comments were not released until June 4th, 2026. That was only 8 days ago. Agencies are now working through approximately 440 pages of response explaining how those recommendations were addressed in the revised tentative order. There have been really no substantive permanent workshops or collaboration discussion between permittees and the board staff since March of 2025. And agencies are still working to understand significant revisions, including new materials such as Appendix 14. For those reasons, permittees have consistently emphasized the need for both adequate review time and meaningful dialogue. We are respectfully asking the board to direct staff to engage in some regular meetings with agencies. We're also asking again for the full 90-day review period in addition to opportunities for engagement. Those discussions would provide an opportunity for meaningful two-way dialogue, allowing agencies and staff to work through remaining concerns together and identify practical solutions. We believe this level of engagement will ultimately result in a stronger and more workable permit, and doing so will help our agencies participating today better understand the board's perspective regarding the proposed schedule, additional engagement opportunities, and next steps in this process. Thank you very, very much for your time. I appreciate all of your service, and thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. And I wanted to make sure I was back for you. Our next speaker.
Next speaker, Cynthia Galvano.
Chair Scandura, board members, and Mr. Lindbergh. My name is Cynthia Gabaldon, and I'm speaking on behalf of the City of Big Bear. The city has actually submitted a letter of support for the extension this Wednesday through an email to the clerk of the board, and we actually request to have that letter entered into the record, and we also acknowledge that there's since been a provided 30-day extension. The city wants to emphasize the following items. The city of Big Bear does not have many options for staffing and funding most of the current city functions. We are a very, very small city, and we're mostly DAC, and we only have about 13 staff members. A lot of people don't know that. We have to trust that the parties involved in the negotiations for regulations, which we need to implement, will spend the time to agree on appropriateness and collaboratively work together to build a permit and plans for successful results. And as the city of Big Bear, with that beautiful lake outside our windows, we really understand what that means. We need to request the time is afforded all parties to work on key issues of the permit. We in particular have a few that have yet to be addressed, and even in the 440 pages of the response to comments, those items were, I don't want to use the word glossed over, but there could be more thoughtfulness involved. And we're actually requesting a delayed hearing date so that this overall collaboration can actually be completed. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next speaker, Bianca Velasco. Next speaker, Jennifer De Tejeda.
Good morning, Chair, members of the board, and staff. My name is Jennifer De Tejeda. I'm a policy organizer with CCAEJ and a resident of San Bernardino. I'm speaking in support of extending the public comment period for the proposed permit. My concern today is not just about the permit itself, but it's about ensuring the meaningful public process. The proposed permit is a lengthy and complex document and will affect communities throughout the region. Residents, community organizations, and other stakeholders here today need adequate time to review the materials and understand the proposal and provide thoughtful feedback. Meaningful public participation is a critical part of environmental decision making. When the public is not given enough time to review information and engage in the process, it becomes difficult for community members to fully understand what is being proposed and how it may affect their communities. Extending the public comment period would strengthen transparency, increase public participation, and help ensure that all interested stakeholders have a fair opportunity to be heard before decisions are made. Also, want to emphasize too that we need interpreters here. Shout out to all the community members that showed up and gave their public comment in Spanish. And for those reasons, I respectfully support CCAEJ's request for an extension of the public comment period and additional opportunities for public engagement. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next speaker, Marvin Norman.
Goedemorgen, voorzitter. Ik ben Marvin Norman. Ik werk als environmental policy analyst bij Center for Community Action and Environmental Justice. I won't do that to you guys. I don't expect you guys to have Dutch translators, but it's kind of insulting that in California we don't have a Spanish translator at a public meeting. Anyway, continuing on, I'm here also for the same reason that many others, to request an extension. For those of you who may not know our organization, our work started because of water quality issues. And so we certainly are big friends of seeing improvements to water quality. Stormwater runoff was the catalyst event that started our founder into the work that she did. So we certainly are glad to see that there's a proposal to strengthen water quality standards, and we would love for more time to look over it, because the other part of our founding is that it's a community event or a community outreach, and that proper community outreach is essential to making sure we have good public policy. And, you know, I've spent a lot of time reading through environmental documents. I'm reading through plenty right now. And so 45 days is usually never enough time. And if there is originally supposed to be 90 days, it's inexcusable that it's not going to be 90 days to begin with. So we certainly would support that extension and hope that we can get the right amount of time so that people can. At the same time, we also are, you know, we want to make sure that we are treating the community and providing the resources they need to make an informed decision, and also that we're not using this time to throw the community under the bus and weaken regulations under the name of making sure that we reach out to community. So we hope that's not the intention that we are working through to make sure that we maintain a strong proposal and permit so that the communities can continue to get clean water. There's still many of our communities have runoff issues. The state is still paying to clean up the original site that was our founding for the next 400 years. We don't want more of those. And so we hope that we can have the meetings and make sure that the public is engaged and is able to get the best water quality actions out of this process. Thank you.
Thank you.
I would just like to remind all of the speakers, the audience, and the public watching at home that instructions for requesting language services are on every agenda, which is offered in both English and Spanish. I implore you to request language services ahead of the meeting, and we will be happy to provide those. Thank you.
Next speaker, we have Anna Gonzalez.
All right. Good morning, members of the board. Anna Gonzalez, I'm the executive director at CCAEJ. But first, I wanted to address that it is a potential Brown Act violation, an AB 39 violation, when you create barriers for a community to participate in a public meeting, such as not having interpretation. Regardless if there's requests or links, community doesn't know that. So you guys should be able to provide it at all times. I am here to speak on the MS4 permitting process. This permit contains hundreds of pages of technical documents that require careful review. Many residents are only now finding out about the implications of this permit and want to become more involved in this process. But we found a few flaws already. First, by failing to require the development of and implementation of WMPs on a reasonable timeline, the implementation schedule proposed in the draft MS4 permit fails to meet the safe harbor standards for a well-defined, transparent, and infinite program set out by the State Water Resources Control Board. Second, both WMP Safe Harbor Program and Monitoring and Reporting Program failed to meet the public participation requirements set out in the State Board orders and the Clean Water Act. Third, the draft MS4 permit fails to include effluent limitations sufficient to ensure compliance with water quality standards and or waste load allocations as required by the Clean Water Act. Fourth, the monitoring and reporting program in the draft MS4 permit fails to link monitoring to an evaluation of compliance with water quality standards or waste load allocations. The draft MS4 fails to conduct any compliance analysis and fails to meet reasonable potential analysis requirements of the Clean Water Act. You all have a responsibility to include all communities in this process and stakeholders. Without sufficient time to review, communities most impacted by pollution are denied the opportunity to engage in decisions that affect their health, water quality, and local environment. Public participation should not be treated as a procedural checkbox. It is meaningful, transparent, and has to be accessible. We respectfully request an extension. If it was promised to have 90 days, let's have the 90 days and honor that, of the common period, so community organizations, residents, and all stakeholders can collaborate and provide meaningful input. Please see CCAEJ as a partner who can help you all bring these community members together to get that meaningful participation and community input. Thank you so much for your consideration.
Thank you very much. And again, I remind all the attendees, as been pointed out by our executive officer and council, we cannot consider any substantive comments entered at today's hearing. Those comments need to be placed in writing, and you have until July 20th to do so. And then there will be an opportunity to present substantive comments on our July 24th meeting. Our next speaker.
Next speaker is Stuart McKibben.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Board Members Stuart McKibbins, Interwest Consulting, and City Engineer for San Jacinto and Riverside County. I'm here to say two things. One, thank you for the 30-day extension on the MS4 permit. And second is that we support the further comments and requests made by both our lead permittee, Mr. Kearns, and Supervisor Spiegel. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next speaker, Kathleen Brunet.
Good morning, Chair and Board. I appreciate your time to speak with you. In the respect of everyone's time, I'm just going to speak, but this is my executive board that came with me. And I, first of all, want to thank you guys for the temporary extension that you've already granted. And we're actually here to ask that you extend that to the 90 days that's been asked. The largest public employee local union in this entire country, we represent over 14,000 members that live and work in this county and cities. And so we have a fiduciary responsibility when there's decisions being made to make sure that they are fiscally responsible. So that's why we're here, and we're here to work with everybody in this room, all the electeds, including yourselves, just to make sure that moving forward that we are making those fiscally responsible decisions. And contrary to popular belief, Teamsters actually do want to help everybody in the communities that we live and work in. So that's, we're here to do that, and just want you to know that I'll end with this. Our mission statement has always been, since we formed 10 years ago, to transform the Inland Empire, and we really want to work with all of you and everybody in this room to do that. So we hope that you'll grant that extra 90-day extension. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Next, we have an online speaker by the name of Savat Kampu.
Good morning, Board. I'm actually here in person. I may have registered online, but I'm here. Again, thank you, Board, for the opportunity to speak. Again, my name is Savat Kampu. I'm representing the City of Corona, and I'm the Public Works Director and the City Engineer. And I just wanted to reiterate that the City has been working with the Regional Board, Riverside County, and partner agencies since the implementation of the MS4 since 1991. But I also want to kind of put a little personal touch in this. I've also been in the San Bernardino and Riverside County areas, having worked for the City of Palm Springs, having worked for the City of Redlands, the City of Rialtos. So I've been in the area for quite some time and have been working and indirectly been involved with the Regional Board. So I really appreciate all the collaboration and all the history that I've been engaging with the Board and the areas. I wanted to let you know that I formerly worked for Caltrans for about 14 years prior to working for the cities. And with a state agency, it is really important to collaborate and to really work with the community, our local agencies, and our regional partners in order to really adopt or in order to really get what's needed and what's meaningful for not just the community, but our residences, our businesses, and so forth. I know we do a very important job in trying to regulate not just the environmental concerns, the water quality, and that's very important. And again, I'm not going to repeat everything that everyone has said, but I just really wanted to emphasize that collaboration is very important, engagement, and a really continued communication between our partners so that we can really do what's good for our residences, our community, our state, and be an example for not just the entire nation, but the world as well. So California is really large and representative. So with that said, I really, really want to, I'm here to also request, as everyone has been requesting, a postponement to the public hearing and subsequently to the premature adoption of a date of the permit. So again, I don't want to take any more of your time. I know everyone is here, probably working their Fridays and days off, and also the conflict of the dates being in summertime. So again, thank you very much for your attention and for being able to speak here.
Thank you for coming in person.
Next speaker, we have online Mark Gray. Next speaker, we have Jaylene Ferris online.
Yeah, I filled out the comment online but said I'd be speaking in person. So, good morning, Chair and members of the board. My name is Jaylene Ferris, and I'm the Interim Public Works Director and City Engineer for the City of Hemet. I would like to thank the board and regional board staff for extending the comment period. We appreciate your willingness to provide stakeholders with additional time to review the tentative MS4 permit and its supporting documentation. As the individual responsible for overseeing implementation of these requirements at the local level, I believe good implementation requires good review and meaningful dialogue. The proposed permit will shape stormwater management programs for many years and carry significant operational, technical, and financial implications for cities throughout the region. While the additional review period is appreciated, there remain important questions and implementation concerns that would benefit from further discussion and collaboration between regional board staff and stakeholders. For that reason, we requestfully respect that the board allow sufficient time for these discussions to occur and for stakeholder input to be meaningfully considered before moving forward with an adoption of the permit. The additional time recently provided creates an important opportunity for regional board staff and stakeholders to work collaboratively to address remaining concerns. We believe that making full use of that opportunity will strengthen the final permit and support a successful implementation throughout the region. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you.
Next online, we have Nathan Mustafa.
Good morning. Someday we'll be able to send digital projections of ourselves to meetings like this, but I'm in person. Good morning, Chair Scandura and board members. My name is Nathan Mustafa, and I have the pleasure of serving as the City of Riverside's Public Works Director. Thank you for extending the comment period for 30 days. Just as a point of reference, because of our city's land area, the regional MS4 permit, if implemented as designed, would cost the City of Riverside residents over $13 million over that same 30-day period. That's about the same as our library system budget over an entire year. For Riverside, the stakes are substantial. And while the draft permit has been updated, unfortunately, the changes made thus far do not account for the very real anticipated impacts to quality of life in our city. Many of our city's priorities will also result in environmental benefits, including water quality. We strive to put the river back in Riverside. We know that a path forward towards a more sustainable future is the construction of dense, livable neighborhoods served by robust, active transportation. Riverside has been relentless in creating programs to streamline the production of new housing and active transportation infrastructure. How can we achieve our objectives with the additional mitigation to infrastructure, land development complexities, and tens of thousands of dollars in fees that this permit would add to each new dwelling unit? How can we continue to provide basic services with such a monumental impact to our agency's budget? We must ensure that the final permit does not conflict with some of our most critical regional objectives and achieves balance. We appreciate that the board created time for continued adjustment. We respectfully request that the July 4th hearing be postponed and further ask that the board direct staff to engage in dialogue for as long as it takes to bring forward a permit that considers the impacts and trade-offs to communities and builds on the collaborative progress made thus far. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next speaker, we have Ray Beamer. Next speaker, we have Monica Herrera.
Chair and board members, can you hear me? Hello?
Yes, we can hear you.
Oh, okay, thank you. My name is Monica Heredia, and I'm the Municipal Utilities and Engineering Director for the City of Redlands. Thank you for the opportunity to provide comments today. I echo everything that's been said so far, and I appreciate the board's decision to provide additional time for review of the revised tentative order. I agree with and support the comments made today, again, regarding the need for both adequate review time and meaningful engagement as this process moves forward. Agencies are continuing to review the revised tentative order, the board responses to comments, and other revisions that will affect implementation of this permit. For those reasons, the City of Redlands respectfully supports providing the full 90-day review period and allowing additional time and opportunity for discussion before the permit is considered for adoption. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Next speaker, we have Jason Uli online.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Thank you. Chair Scandura, members of the board, my name is Jason Uli, and I'm the general manager of the Riverside County Flood Control and Water Conservation District. And I've worked with and been a fan of this board since the turn of the century. You know, when I first started working with this board, it was working with Jerry Thiebaud, Board Member Rue, Gary Brown, Tim Moore, you know, on these very same programs. And what I've learned is this board is renowned around the state for its collaborative processes. It's really a badge of honor. And the very recent adoption of Lake Elsinore and Santa Ana River bacteria TMDL revisions are a perfect example of that process at its best, with support from all sides at the time of adoption. And for a lot of agencies, that would be a rare accomplishment. But this board doesn't just do it once, you do it over and over and over again. You guys are like the Alex Rodriguez or Lou Gehrig of permitting, just hitting grand slam after grand slam. And I thoroughly believe that we can get there on this permit as well. And I think there's a lot of frustration on all sides right now that it doesn't feel like we have made as much progress as we should have. But I think it really boils down to the fact that the process we've been using on this permit is very different than the process we've used on the TMDLs and the other processes that I've seen this board and staff use on other efforts over my many years of collaborations. And so that's why we're asking for your support and Eric's support in really trying to focus in on some very key issues and ensuring we have a truly collaborative process with back and forth to try to bring those home. And I truly believe that there's another grand slam to be had. I can tell you that the counties are on the bases. We just need your help bringing them home. And so I would ask, please stay true to our values. This is a significant procedural effort. Any one of these counties could have the size or population of a state on their own. So this is a little bit like trying to solve the Colorado River Compact in a way. But if you give us the time, we can succeed and bring another success to this board. So thank you for your time, and please consider our request that we originally made in the May 20th letter. Thank you.
Thank you, Jason. And for the record, since we're talking baseball, I like to think of us as the Shohei Ohtani of regulatory agencies. We're good hitters and we're good pitchers.
There are no other speakers at this time.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, everybody, for all the comments you've entered here. Most of you here present, and also those of you online. Again, our next public hearing on this matter will have a public hearing on this matter on Friday, July 24th at 9 o'clock in the City of Orange, the City of Orange City Hall. We also have a meeting scheduling a meeting for August 21st, where we may take up adoption of the permit. And so with that, we now move on to our executive officer's report.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. For my executive officer's report at this meeting, I'm going to focus on the GKN hazardous materials event in Garden Grove. The below timeline is based on information compiled by the Santa Ana Regional Water Quality Control Board and various media reports. As a means of background, on May 21st, first responders from the Orange County Fire Authority arrived at GKN Aerospace's Garden Grove facility on Western Avenue after reports that a tank containing methyl malacrylate was overheating and off-gassing. On May 22nd, that was the Friday before the holiday weekend, due to unstable conditions, evacuation orders were issued for over 50,000 residents of Garden Grove. On Saturday, May 23rd, Governor Gavin Newsom declared a state of emergency in Orange County and mobilized state resources, including the Governor's Office of Emergency Services, or Cal-OES. Evacuation zones remained active over the holiday weekend as teams monitored and assessed stabilization progress. On Tuesday, May 26th, all evacuation orders were lifted after Orange County Fire Authority determined threats of catastrophic failure had been mitigated. State Water Resource Control Board's Emergency Management Program and the Santa Ana Water Board staff were in regular communication with state and local partners during the event and shared information about water quality risks from a potential chemical leak. The State Water Board and Santa Ana Water Board deployed staff to support the joint FEMA-Cal OES interim operating facility in Garden Grove. Santa Ana Water Board served in a supportive role with Cal OES and Cal EPA during the event and inspected the facility once it was safe to do so. The Santa Ana Water Board staff joined Orange County Public Works on Thursday, May 28th, and conducted sampling in the flood control channels near the facility. The sampling was submitted for lab analyses on May 29th, and those results are still pending. As reported in the Los Angeles Times and other media outlets, statements by the Orange County Healthcare Agency on July 4th walked back prior claims that there was no leak of chemical in the tank crisis. Various federal, state, and local agencies continue to investigate whether a leak occurred. The major water quality concern over this event remains whether leakage from the chemical tanks or runoff from the water used to cool the tank, if not fully contained by emergency response teams, flowed through stormwater drains to the Bolsa Chica Channel, Huntington Harbor, and the Pacific Ocean. The Unified Command led the immediate emergency response and has the most current information regarding water containment on the property during the event. Orange County Health Agency conducted sampling at and near the site during the event and during recovery. The water boards currently do not have details about that sampling or when the results can be expected. Filed an official request for that information yesterday. GKN has had coverage under the Industrial General Permit for stormwater discharges since 2004. According to the publicly accessible data in the Stormwater Multiple Application and Reporting Tracking System, also known as SMARTS, the facility has had several violations related to late annual reports. Regional Board inspected the facility on June 3rd per its authority under the Industrial General Permit. A report on that is forthcoming. Santa Ana Water Board staff continue to gather information related to the event and its aftermath, and that will be shared on our webpage, including links to public databases and relevant permitting programs. Please contact my staff for additional information. We want to ensure that we have maximum transparency over our participation in this event, and I'm sure that there will be more information forthcoming. So, thank you.
Okay. Well, first of all, on behalf of the board, I want to thank all of the staff of the Santa Ana Regional Water Quality Control Board who provided support in this very serious incident. We were not the primary responder, but we had to devote a significant amount of resources to assist the county. And then we have people from Orange County here today who I'm sure had to respond to that as well. It's greatly appreciated, this sudden amount of effort that you had to put in. And I understand that the work still continues out there. So we have people that are still assisting in this whole effort, and we're also also looking at regulatory actions on this. So thank you very much. Our next item. Oh, board members, any questions or comments? Okay. Next item is an action item for the approval of the meeting minutes for the April 24th board meeting. And in your package is an errata sheet for this item. There was a typo. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm out of order. I skipped ahead. Our next item is actually our State Water Resources Control Board liaison report. And is Deirdre Diadamo.
Good morning, Chair Scandura and members of the board. Good to see you all. Well, I'd like to start with just thanking those of you who were able to participate in the Water Quality Coordinating Committee. This is an annual meeting of all the regional water boards and the state board. This year, we held the meeting in Sacramento on May 14th and 15th. Chair Scandura, Vice Chair, and Board Member Lopez were in attendance, and I believe some of you were able to join remotely as well. So thank you for that. Anyway, these meetings have been going on since the adoption of the Porter-Cologne Water Quality Control Act, which went into effect January of 1970. This year, we received standard updates that we normally receive from the governor's office, Secretary Garcia from Cal EPA, the Office of Chief Counsel, our executive director's report, and then we received reports from the Communications Office, the Budget Office, Legislative Office, Division of Financial Assistance, the Division of Information Technology, and then the part that I really enjoy is we have we receive reports from all of the regional boards, and we break that up over the two-day period. We also covered two specific topics this year, focusing more detailed time on the wastewater needs assessment, which I have updated you on periodically, getting ready to roll out a list of systems that are at risk or potential at risk of failing. And also covered the emerging issue of data centers in California. The meeting was recorded and have been posted on our Water Quality Coordinating Committee webpage. On May 19th, our board received an annual update of the Racial Equity Action Plan. And what we received was updates from each of our divisions and offices detailing progress made toward their racial equity actions and what the divisions are doing to implement the plan. There's an interactive report that's available online at waterboards.ca.gov/racial-equity. And this interactive report allows viewers to filter updates by division or offices in order to focus in on areas that you'd be interested in. On May 20th, we held our annual workshop on the status of the California Natural Resource Agency Salt and Sea Management Program. We received updates on projects to mitigate impacts of the shrinking sea. The program is still off on the targets, cumulative targets for these restoration projects, but it was very encouraging to see the most recent progress and the plans going forward. So it was overall very heartening to hear the progress of what's going on at the Salton Sea. Continue to have concerns, though, in that area because of some of the discussions going on the Colorado and the impacts emergency actions and interim plans to address the climate change impacts on the Colorado and the spillover, no pun intended, but the spillover impacts that would occur with reduced drainage into the Salton Sea. Our board did issue a draft decision and draft permit for the Sites Reservoir Project. That release was in March, the 20th of March, with public comment deadline in May on the 22nd. And so stay tuned for further action on that. We generally go into closed session to deliberate either the Sites Reservoir Project or the Delta Conveyance Project. And speaking of Delta Conveyance, our Administrative Hearings Office continues the rebuttal portion of the Delta Conveyance hearing. And if you're interested in following those proceedings, the information can be found and links to the YouTube channel on the project webpage. At our last meeting on June 2nd, we received an update on implementation of Making Conservation a California Way of Life. The Water Use Efficiency Regulation has been in effect since the 1st of January, 2025. And this regulation requires urban retail water suppliers to annually calculate and comply with their urban water use objective, carry out commercial, industrial, and institutional performance measures, and also provide annual reports to our board. So we received at this meeting progress on supplier report submission and compliance with their objectives, and also upcoming regulatory deadlines and requirements. We had an interesting discussion with a number of the stakeholders that have been working with our staff on technical assistance for those water suppliers that continue to be challenged with meeting their objectives and working in these partnerships and mentorship opportunities to support those suppliers with water conservation efforts. At our last June meeting, our board adopted emergency regulations for electronic reporting of drinking water quality data. These regulations will allow our board to enforce the current electronic reporting requirements directly against public water systems, which are responsible for utilizing laboratories to provide analysis of drinking water that report regulatory results through our California Laboratory Intake Portal. Our staff continues on stakeholder meetings for our annual fee updates that we have in September. Most recently, our staff met with stakeholders on May 6th to discuss possible changes to the water quality certification fees and they will be holding a fee stakeholder meeting on July the 11th for drinking water and environmental. Wait a minute. I'm sorry. I've seen a typo here. We had a meeting yesterday for fees for the drinking water and environmental lab accreditation program. And then today we have a stakeholder meeting on water quality and water rights fees. And then the final meeting on July 30th for the water quality and water rights stakeholder. Okay, moving on to our expert panel for our agricultural expert panel. And I've updated you on this process in the past. This is the reconvening of an expert panel, actually not a reconvening, but a second expert panel that we formed in order to obtain recommendations on our irrigated lands regulatory program. Last Friday, our board held a final plenary meeting of the expert panel to review and discuss the initial recommendations in response to the panel charge questions. They did finalize the report and it will be officially presented at our board meeting next week, where we'll have a discussion regarding process and next steps. At our meeting next week on June 16th, we have an information item regarding constituents of emergency concern and the program for that project, providing an update on program progress and interagency coordination. We expect that we will receive an overview of the program progress, including development of a statewide constituents of emergency concern strategy and key foundational efforts, highlighting the ongoing work. Most interestingly, we will be receiving also updates from this program and along with the Department of Toxic Substance Control and Caltrans on a chemical called 6-PPD, which is a chemical used in tire manufacturing that prevents rubber from degrading. That chemical byproducts that end up washing into streams impacts coho salmon. And so we expect to receive updates on the status of their review and on the status of alternatives to this chemical that's used in tire manufacturing. Cal EPA is hosting a series of virtual public workshops to share and gain input on their efforts to address vapor intrusion at contaminated sites. The fifth and final workshop in the series is being held next week on June 17th from 9 to 12. Our staff will be accepting written comments for the Department of Transportation's proposed annual update to the total maximum daily load compliance plan for the Department of Transportation required by our board's Caltrans statewide municipal stormwater permit. The deadline for public comments was June 8th. And then on Mono Lake, our staff will be holding two remote workshops to collect information on the condition of Mono Basin's public trust resources and to evaluate the potential management options. The workshops will focus on new data collected since the board issued the water right decision in 1994. Those dates for the workshop, actually one was just held last week on June 4th, and then the next one will be on June 25th, focusing on California gulls and other migratory birds. That workshop is from 9 to 12, and there's a registration link on the Mono Lake program page. For those that are interested in seeing the previous workshop that was last week, that focus is on was on water quality, salinity, brine shrimp, and alkali flies. And then lastly, I'd like to announce that we have, through our communications office, a new webpage. It's called Ebb and Flow, and it's a digital publication from the communications office. So I'd encourage you to take a look at it for the most recent topics that were covered, recharge in the San Joaquin Valley, water use efficiency, making conservation a way of life, and then there's an article on harmful algal blooms that you may find of interest. That's all I have, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Okay. Well, thank you, Vice Chair Adamo, and I apologize for overlooking you. I know you'd been listening patiently through all the public comments. We received a lot more public comments than we expected. I also apologize for mispronouncing your name. I don't know why I did that other than a senior moment. But do our board members have any questions or comments for the Vice Chair? See any? Okay. Well, thank you very much, Vice Chair Diadamo.
Thank you. Good to see you all.
Okay. Now we go to item number 4, which is an action item for the approval of the meeting minutes for the April 24th board meeting. And included in your package is a errata sheet for this item. Basically, it was to fix a typo that was in there. And so any kind of motion to be made on this needs to include the errata sheet. So We have a motion.
Approval with the amended language.
Okay, so it's been moved. Do you have a second? Okay, second by Board Member Murray. And Vanessa, if we could take the roll call.
Board Member Lopez?
Aye.
Board Member Clark?
Aye.
Board Member Murray?
Aye.
Board Member Rue?
Aye.
Vice Chair Alvarado?
Aye.
Chair Scandura?
Aye.
Motion passes.
Okay. Well, thank you. Next item is this consideration of the consent calendar. We have one item, and that's listed as item number 6, which is waste discharge requirements for Riverside University Health Wellness Center project in Riverside County, R8-2026-0035. And this item does also have an errata sheet. There was a figure that needed to be corrected. And at this time, are there any interest persons or board member requests to remove the consent calendar item? Seeing no requests.
Board Member Lopez?
Actually, we need a motion.
I'd move approval of the consent calendar with the amended document.
Okay. Moved by Board Member Lopez, second by Board Member Clark. Could we have a roll call vote?
Board Member Lopez?
Aye.
Board Member Clark?
Aye.
Board Member Murray?
Aye.
Board Member Rue?
Aye.
Board Vice Chair Alvarado?
Aye.
Chair Scandura?
Aye.
Motion passes.
Okay. Well, thank you. Our next item is an information item. We have representatives from the Inland Empire Utilities Agency present to discuss to present to the board the Chino Basin program. And so we have with us, I believe, Kevin Alexander, the general manager for IEUA.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you, Chair Scandura and members of the board. I am Kevin Alexander, the general manager here at IUA. Really appreciate you all being here today at our facility and like to welcome you here. As you're aware, our agency provides wastewater and water services, as well as recycled water services, to over a million people here in the southwest corner of San Bernardino County, from the city of Upland to the cities of Fontana, and all the way south here to the city of Chino. On behalf of our board and our staff, we want to thank you all for the hard work that you put into this, and Eric and his team support us extensively all the time. This board has been very supportive of our regional treatment system approach to protecting the environment and public health. And we also have been very instrumental in helping us with our recycled water program to provide reliable, safe, and sustainable water here in Chino Basin. And with that, what we're going to do is we have the presentation, right? Not sure if they... Right, you can flip over to the next slide if you don't mind. With that, we're going to do an update here for you today and provide you an overview of the Chino Basin program. This is an expansion of our recycled water program here in the region. As I mentioned, you've been very helpful to us over the years with our recycled water program. Liz Hurst here, standing next to me, is our program manager. She's going to help me after I present an overview of what we're doing with this program. So next slide, please. As you're aware, the Chino Basin program, or you might not be aware, we are here to provide that status update. And this is a program that is helpful to both the state and to our agency. And what it does for us is it allows us to basically share the ecological environmental benefits in the Northern California, and by leaving water in the reservoirs there. And it allows us to recycle our reclaim our water further by expanding our recycled water program and putting our water into the aquifer here locally. So as you're aware, we do spreading, and we also do direct use here in our region. That's the permits that we currently have. And with this expansion to the Chino Basin program, it will expand that recycled water program. As you're aware, there are not lots of places to spread recycled water here locally to be able to continue with what we've been doing in our history. So the next phase of our expansion relies on advanced treatment, similar to Orange County and some of the other agencies around that do direct injection into the aquifer. Our program would take the additional 15,000 acre feet and put it in the aquifer here locally to be used locally, and allows for the offset with the water in Northern California. We could go through this extensively with you. There's been a lot of work that's been done, and I'm going to let Liz take over from here and actually share all the work that we've done so far with a simple update for you. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. Excuse me. Thank you. So just to build on what Kevin said, so this Chino Basin program began out of a master planning effort to strengthen our water supply reliability for our service area in Southern California. And in 2017, we created this program in order, as Kevin mentioned, to both, well, let me back up one step. Our service area, all of our imported water comes from the State Water Project. So when the Water Storage Investment Program was available, this was a huge opportunity for us in terms of thinking about how do we make sure that we can make stronger investments in our local communities, so that we have greater control over our own water supply and are not as reliant on the flashy systems in Northern California. So with the WSIP program, you had to show a nexus between Northern California and ecosystem benefits, which was perfect for us. We said, hey, if you invest in storage in our local Chino Basin groundwater aquifer, we can roll on and off voluntarily so that there's benefits to the fish in Northern California. Next slide. So in order to figure out how to do this, very complicated, and there's a lot of work that's been happening in the background. So it's a series of coordinated exchanges to make the Northern California piece of the program work. This is the most complex part. It's involved many, many years and hundreds of hours of meetings with state and different agencies to figure out how to work this out.
But basically, for a pulse flow to occur to provide the ecosystem benefit in Northern California, we have a series of coordinated actions between IUA, our partner Metropolitan Water District, Fish and Wildlife, who ultimately gets to control the flow and the release. They have all of the flexibility that they need to try and restore the fish and the ecosystem up in the Feather River, and then Department of Water Resources to actually make the release from Oroville. Next slide. So the other part of this, the Southern California part, is a bit more straightforward. It's, as Kevin mentioned, an increased advanced water treatment plant so that we can store that water in our basin, basically doubling the amount of recycled water that we're able to put into storage every year. But how it would work, and what this is just kind of showing, it grows the supply in the orange on the bottom. We're building up a storage account every year, and then when there's a pulse flow release in Northern California, that stored groundwater is pumped instead of bringing imported water into our service area. So in this way, we were able to make sure that our local investments are not decreasing any of the access that our customers have to their supply. This would be a voluntary program. We've got tremendous partners in Cucamonga Valley Water District and Fontana Water Company on this. And they would be working with us in order to pump that stored water when there's a call or a transfer in Northern California. So next slide. So the three public benefit contracts, this is more on the water storage investment program side of it, that we're providing. The first is that pulse flow, which has all those complicated interactions. It would be a total of 375,000 acre feet for pulse flow releases over 25 years. A minimum of 15,000 acre feet would be offered every year, and a maximum of 50,000 acre feet per pulse flow could happen. So this is not based on hydrology because this water is backed up by our recycled water supply. And if Fish and Wildlife chooses not to do a pulse flow in a given year, the account just rolls up and stays in storage so they could have a bigger release in a future year. For the State Water Resources Control Board, there's also the local benefit of treating and storing that 15,000 acre feet per year of purified water, which over time will help improve and maintain our groundwater basin quality. And for the Department of Water Resources, there's a third benefit, which is by having an additional pumping and extraction capability for a basin, we'd be able to better withstand local emergencies, including things like a delta levee failure, by having the production capacity to roll off and be independent in those type of extreme situations. Next slide. Okay, so now we're getting into all the complicated facilities to make these programs work. So it is a big ticket item. You see here all of the facilities that make up the Chino Basin program. These are the Southern California components that would be constructed here. Next slide, or click. So the advanced water purification, the recycled water pipeline, and the pure water recharge facilities, these all make up that water quality benefit for both the state board and working closely with the regional board as well on the permits to do that. Next. The extraction facilities and the interconnection to Metropolitan provide that emergency response benefit. And next. And in combination, all of these facilities enable that pulse flow to occur through the relationship with Metropolitan Water District. Next slide. So here's a snapshot of all of the various permits, or not permits, sorry, the agreements in order to make this program happen. So I'm very happy to report that we've made significant progress on this. We're expecting to go in front of the Water Commission in August or September to release our public benefit contracts. So this is a huge landmark for us. What that does is it confirms that, yes, we are providing all the benefits. We've got the clarity on how that performance would be met in our interactions with the state agencies. Next slide. So there are a number of environmental permits that go along with this activity. We completed our initial PEIR for the Chino Basin program in 2022. It's currently being recertified. We're going to be taking that to our board in July 2026. There were some minor editorial changes that are being addressed per writ that we're doing to clarify, like, the timeline of the program, how long it's going to take, and the program objectives. At the same meeting, we will be bringing forward, there's a separate supplemental environmental impact report by the Department of Water Resources for the Northern California component of both the Chino Basin program and all of the other pulse flow projects that are part of the water storage investment program. And we've got two wastewater petitions that were filed this May. So one was for IUA and a second one for the city of Rialto. So both of these are working through their process. And again, Eric and his team have been very helpful as we've navigated that. Thank you. Next slide. So as far as program progress, I'm very excited to report that we're finally starting to break ground, and this is going from concept into reality. So for our TAKE facilities preliminary design work, this has been years in the making. We've just released to our partners the final four preliminary design reports, so those are under review by the teams right now. And we've also started construction earlier this year on our demonstration facility for our advanced treatment plant. This is on schedule to be completed by the end of the year, with operations starting in February and a ribbon cutting shortly thereafter. So this demonstration facility is going to be used both to refine and make sure that we're using the best technology when we build the full-scale plant, as well as to for community outreach and public engagement. Next slide. So for the full-scale advanced water purification facility, we're working with the Progressive Design Build team, JF Shea, Tetra Tech. They are completing their technical design workshops and their design reports as well. They've completed their early field investigations, and so now they're doing both the demonstration facility and using the work from that to inform this final design. Next slide. There's also an 11-mile pipeline to bring external recycled water sources from the city of Rialto over to our treatment plant. And at this stage, we've got a different progressive design build team on board for that, the Steve Piratos and Stantec team. They have completed their surveying, pothole, and geotechnical investigations and identified the location for where the interconnection to the treatment plant would occur. Next. We've also, this was very exciting, we've also completed the site identification for all of our aquifer replenishing injection wells. So as Kevin mentioned, we are land constrained now for recharge basins, and we're looking for new ways to put that water into the ground. The best technology that we've that's available for that is injection wells. We did some preliminary testing a year ago, and were able to reduce the total number of wells that are needed from 16 to 9. It's a tremendous cost savings to everybody, as you can imagine. With this program, we are looking at every way that we can include value engineering to try and control and make this as affordable as possible. Next slide. As I mentioned, there are four preliminary design reports that are currently under review. These should be finalized by the end of the summer. And next slide. So in terms of all of these different facilities I've just kind of ran you through, wanted to show you a snapshot of where they are. So here's our whole service area with our existing recycled water infrastructure. And in blue, you see the kind of lakes that you see there are the recharge basins. Next slide. So the portion that we're talking about is over in the Rancho Cucamonga and Fontana area. Next. So this is a summary of all of the different projects that we're going to be constructing. So as you can see, it's a lot of infrastructure. On the bottom, that purple line, not all of the other purple lines, but just that lower kind of pink, it looks like it's all the same shade to me right now, but that lower line is the connection from the city of Rialto. In yellow, that's our advanced treatment plant and the injection well facilities to store that water into the groundwater basin. In dark blue, those are the existing facilities that would be rehabilitated in order to produce for production well performance. And the red pipelines and new infrastructure would be for that upsized production capacity. Next. Okay, so it all comes down to capital costs, though. So this project, as all projects have, has grown exponentially since it was originally conceived back in 2017. Today, it sits at just over $1 billion for our cost estimate. This is showing the full engineering range with the plus 50%, minus 30% range. We're hoping to keep it as close as possible to the existing cost, if not the lower range. But this is where the Water Storage Investment Program and our other grants and federal grant applications are so critical to making sure that we're able to provide this in an affordable way to our communities. Next. So in terms of a snapshot of what's coming up next, we've done a lot, but we've got a lot further to go. For the final funding award hearing with the Water Commission, that falls in the fall of 2027. And we're continuing, as I mentioned, to make a lot of progress on all of these fronts. But with that, that concludes my presentation. We're happy to answer any questions you may have, but it can be a bit of a rabbit hole. So thank you for your time.
Okay. Well, thank you, Kevin and Elizabeth, for the excellent presentation. Board members, do you have any questions or comments?
I just want to thank you for the presentation. It's great. It's a great project. You look forward to some ribbon cutting in the future, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Any others? Okay. And first of all, I want to thank you for your presentations. Also, a couple of things. Congratulations to Kevin, who was recently appointed as the general manager for this district. Definitely wish you all the best in your position. And then thank you also for making your facilities available to us today for this meeting. Okay. We are now going to be moving into our two enforcement hearings we're going to have for the remainder of the meeting. And for this, it's going to be necessary that we take a 10-minute break so we can set up. And then we will begin our enforcement hearing, the first being item number 8, which is Hickson Metal Finishing. Okay, we're going to resume our meeting. We're going to take things a little bit out of order. Rather than taking up item 8, we're going to take up item number 9 first, which is the public hearing on administrative civil liability complaint which is K2 Material Minerals, located in San Bernardino County. And I'd like to ask the counsel for the prosecution team to make a statement.
We on? Thank you, Board Chair, and thank you, Board. Just a quick update. We received a signed waiver for the hearing from the discharger this morning, and we've entered negotiations on the waiver. So we request that this hearing is pulled from this calendar, and to the extent that settlement negotiations fail and we need to include it on a future calendar, we'll let you guys know.
Okay. Well, thank you, counsel. And any other questions? Okay. So we will now move into the Hickson Metals case. So now we're taking up item number 8. Please bear with me. There's a lot of material here to cover. This is the time and place for the hearing in the matter of Administrative Civil Liability Complaint R8-2026-0007 issued to Hickson Metal Finishing, proposing a penalty of $45,000 based on alleged violations of provisions of the Water Code for exceeding the total maximum daily load numeric effluent limitations during the 2022-2023 reporting period and failure to timely report sampling data during the 2021-2022 reporting period for the facility located at 829 Production Place in the city of Newport Beach. I am John Scandura, Chair of the Santa Ana Water Board, and here with me in person are Vice Chair Gloria Alvarado, Board Members Letitia Clark, Al Lopez, Chris Murray, and Bill Rue. This hearing is being conducted as a hybrid meeting with an option for the public to participate via Zoom. The Board is being advised by Supervising Engineering Geologist Alan Kwok and Heraclio Pimentel, attorney for the Santa Ana Water Board. The advisory team has not had any substantive conversations regarding the issues involved in this proceeding with the prosecution staff or Hickson Metal Finishing. Members of the prosecution team include Eric Lindberg, our executive officer, Brian Covalone, the assistant executive officer, Michelle Beckwith, senior environmental scientist, Nick Amini, supervising water resource control engineer, Caitlin Diaz, environmental scientist, and Catherine Haw, attorney with the State Water Board's Office of Enforcement. Neither the prosecution team staff nor attorneys are advising the Santa Ana Water Board in this matter. The prosecution team is a party to this proceeding. Hickson Metal Finishing is represented by Charles Pomeroy, and is Mr. Pomeroy here? Any?
Yes.
Thank you very much. The official record of the testimony at this hearing will be created by our court reporter. This hearing is also being recorded. At the end of this hearing, the Santa Ana Water Board will close the hearing in this manner, and the board will deliberate on the evidence. The board may adjourn to closed session to consider the evidence received and deliberate on a decision. After considering evidence, the Santa Ana Water Board will make findings of fact and conclusions of law and determine whether to impose the proposed civil liability, impose a different amount, or decline to impose any liability. All written evidence was required to be received by the applicable deadlines in the revised hearing procedure. The prosecution team submitted timely evidence and argument. The respondent also submitted timely evidence and argument. The board did not receive any written comments from non-parties or evidentiary objections from the parties. Having received no objections, all materials that were received by the deadlines are hereby made part of this record. If the parties use speaking notes or any visual aids illustrating previously submitted evidence with their presentation, those will be made part of the record. No other documentary evidence will be accepted into the record unless the board makes a specific ruling to allow it. If you intend to make public comment on this item, please submit a speaker card. The hearing will be conducted in accordance with the revised hearing procedure and the order of proceedings. The order of proceedings are as follows. Prosecution team presentation of evidence is first. Hickson Metal Finishing may cross-examine the prosecution team's witnesses. Next is the presentation of Hickson Metal Finishing's evidence. The prosecution team may cross-examine Hickson Metal Finishing witness. Thereafter is any rebuttal by the prosecution team, followed by cross-examination or additional rebuttal testimony by Hickson Metal, if any. Then we will have public comments, 3-minute limit for each commenter, followed by questions from the board and advisory team. Then we will receive the prosecution team's closing statement, followed by Hickson Metal's Finishing's closing statement. Any party wishing to present an opening statement should do so at the beginning of their evidentiary presentation. Any party wishing to conduct redirect or recross-examination should request permission to do so at the appropriate time. The prosecution team and Hickson Metal Finishing each have 30 minutes for their presentations, cross-examination, and closing statements. The board members and the advisory team may ask questions of the parties and witnesses at any time. Time spent answering questions will not be deducted from the parties' 30-minute time amounts. So, I will now administer the oath. If you intend to provide testimony on this matter, please stand and raise your right hand. So, do you solemnly state under penalty of perjury that the evidence that you shall give in this matter shall be the whole truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? All persons presenting testimony must state your name and whether you have taken the oath before testifying. Thank you. And so I'd like to start with our first presentation is by the prosecution team.
Okay. Good morning, members of the board, Board Chair Scandura. I am Brian Covalone, the prosecuting officer for this case, and I have taken the oath. We are joined in person by our Office of Enforcement Legal Counsel, Catherine Haw, seated to my right, our stormwater supervisor, Michelle Beckwith, also seated to my right, and her staff, Caitlin Diaz, behind, as well as our surface water branch manager, Nick Amini, behind me. The matter being presented to you is related to mandatory minimum penalties. As you will hear from our staff and counsel, mandatory minimum penalties, or MMPs, are penalties of $3,000 per violation that the legislature has required us to impose. These are not discretionary violations that arise out of our typical enforcement prioritization process. Instead, these penalties arise for any facility regulated by the Industrial General Permit who is required to comply with total maximum daily loads related requirements expressed as numeric effluent limitations. When facilities exceed these limitations or fail to appropriately submit their reports, then we are directed by Water Code to impose the mandatory minimum penalties. During the upcoming presentation, you will hear from our stormwater section staff about how they assess compliance with these numeric effluent limitations and how they calculate mandatory minimum penalties. You will also hear from legal counsel regarding the legal framework for this action and the reasons why this penalty should be imposed despite Hixon Metal Finishing's settlement agreement with the Orange County Coastkeeper. At the end of the hearing, it will be clear that Hixon Metal Finishing is subject to the proposed mandatory minimum penalties outlined in the complaint and that such an action is merited both legally and by the evidence presented to you today. With that, Caitlin will now begin her presentation.
Good morning, Board Chair Scandura, members of the board. My name is Caitlin Diaz, and I'm an environmental scientist in the General Stormwater Unit for the Santa Ana Water Board, and I have taken the oath. Today, I'll be presenting the proposed mandatory minimum penalty complaint for Hixon Metal Finishing, complaint number R8-2026-0007. Next slide, please. Before I begin, I would like to briefly outline today's presentation. First, I'll explain the requirements of the Industrial General Permit, provide background on Hixon Metal Finishing and the requirements related to total maximum daily load numeric effluent limitations, and walk through the violations outlined in the complaint and staff's recommendations. Next slide, please. So why are we here? The 2018 amendment to the Industrial General Permit, which became effective July 1st, 2020, incorporated total maximum daily loads, or TMDLs, specific requirements for industrial facilities that discharge to an impaired water body. Hixon Metal Finishing exceeded the total maximum daily load numeric effluent limitation, or NELs, for copper and zinc in the 2022-2023 reporting period. Hixon Metal Finishing also failed to timely submit discharge monitoring reports for the 2021-2022 reporting period. Next slide, please. The Industrial General Permit is a National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System permit, or an NPDS permit, under the Federal Clean Water Act. The permit regulates stormwater discharges and authorized non-stormwater discharges from industrial facilities throughout California. The goal of the permit is to improve water quality in the state by addressing pollutants discharged through industrial activities. Permit coverage under the Industrial General Permit is required for facilities with a standard industrial classification code, or an SIC code, listed in Attachment A of the permit. Facilities must self-report their SIC code using OSHA's SIC manual to accurately describe their industrial activity. Some examples of industrial facilities listed in Attachment A are manufacturing facilities, transportation facilities, and recycling facilities. The goal is to improve water quality in the state by addressing the pollutants to stormwater discharges associated with industrial activities. These pollutants are carried to rivers, streams, lakes, and the ocean through stormwater and non-stormwater runoff and can threaten and adversely affect human health and the environment. Next slide, please. To comply with the Industrial General Permit, facilities must develop a site-specific stormwater pollution prevention plan, or a SWIP, and implement best management practices to reduce or prevent pollutant discharges. Best management practices can range from basic housekeeping measures, like sweeping, to advanced treatment systems, depending on the facility's pollutant profile. The Industrial General Permit requires stormwater sampling for pollutants generated by the facility's industrial activities. The Industrial General Permit requires facilities to submit all sampling and analytical results for all individual samples via the Water Board Stormwater Multiple Application and Report Tracking System, or SMARTS, within 30 days of obtaining results for each sampling event. Like I mentioned earlier, the 2018 amendment to the industrial general permit incorporated TMDL-specific requirements for industrial facilities that discharge to an impaired water body, including the implementation of the TMDL compliance table in Attachment E. And I'll touch more on this later in the presentation. Next slide, please. Hixa Metal Finishing is located at 829 Production Place in the city of Newport Beach and operates an industrial facility. Note this aerial map is identified as Prosecution Team Exhibit Number 2. The facility self-reported Newport Bay as its receiving water when unrolling under the industrial general permit. On this second map, identified as Prosecution Team Exhibit 6, the green star designates the location of Hixa Metal Finishing, and the pink polygon is Lower Newport Bay. This shows the facility in relation to the impaired water body. Next slide, please. Hixa Metal Finishing has been rolled under the industrial general permit since 1993 and is engaged in coating materials through a chemical process such as anodizing, plating, and painting slash coating. These industrial activities are described as SIC code 3471. Hixa Metal Finishing is required to sample for zinc as a requirement of Table 1 in the industrial general permit, which requires sampling for additional applicable parameters based on a facility's SIC code. Hixa Metal Finishing must also sample for copper and lead due to these parameters being identified in the facility's specific pollutant source assessment. Therefore, Hixa Metal Finishing is required to comply with and report its compliance with the Lower Newport Bay copper, lead, and zinc numeric effluent limitations listed in Attachment E. Note this table is a summary of select information from Table E2 from the Industrial General Permit, identified as Prosecution Team Exhibit Number 1, which lists the numeric effluent limitations for copper, lead, and zinc for facilities who discharge to Lower Newport Bay. Next slide, please. Section 13385 of the Water Code requires the regional boards to assess mandatory minimum penalties for serious or chronic violations. Water Code Section 13385, Subdivision H, subjects a discharger to a mandatory minimum penalty of $3,000 for specific serious violations for numeric effluent limitation compliance. Water Code Section 13385, Subdivision I1, subjects a discharger to a mandatory minimum penalty of $3,000 for chronic violations for numeric effluent limitation compliance. Pursuant to Water Code Section 13385.1, the failure to file a discharge monitoring report required pursuant to Water Code Section 13383 for each complete period of 30 days following the deadline for submitting the report constitutes a serious violation and is also subject to a mandatory minimum penalty per Water Code Section 13385, Subdivision H. Next slide, please. TMDL numeric effluent limitation compliance is typically assessed yearly for all industrial facilities subject to Attachment E requirements. Depending on other priorities at the time, TMDL numeric effluent limitation compliance is assessed at the end of the fiscal year when all of the annual reports have been submitted. Sampling and analytical results for reporting year are reviewed to assess compliance by comparing all analytical results obtained for each sampling location to the corresponding instantaneous maximum numeric effluent limitation values in the TMDL compliance table E2. Per Section 5C1 of the Industrial General Permit, an instantaneous maximum numeric effluent limitation exceedance occurs when two or more analytical results from samples taken for any single parameter within a reporting year exceed the instantaneous maximum numeric effluent limitation value. Monitoring report submittal dates are reviewed in SMARTS to determine if they were submitted timely, as all sampling and analytical results for an individual sample must be submitted within 30 days of obtaining results for each sampling event. Expedited payment letters are then issued to facilities who have accrued mandatory minimum penalties for serious or chronic violations. Since the 2018 amendment to the Industrial General Permit became effective in 2020, a significant amount of effort has occurred to assess TMDL numeric effluent limitation compliance for industrial facilities who discharge to an impaired water body. As of today, the Santa Ana Water Board staff have issued 70 expedited payment letters for the same TMDL violations, and staff have settled 69 cases. Next slide, please. During the 2022-2023 reporting period, Hixa Metal Finishing collected samples during three storm events and certified and submitted the analytical data in SMARTS. As seen in Table 1, Hixa Metal Finishing exceeded the instantaneous maximum copper NEL of 0.00578 milligrams per liter and the instantaneous maximum numeric effluent limitation value for zinc of 0.095 milligrams per liter for discharge locations, yard area B1-B2, yard area B2-B3, yard B3-B4, and drive area B4-B5 on November 8, 2022, February 24, 2023, and March 10, 2023. This table also shows how each of these data points is subject to a mandatory man penalty as either a serious or chronic violation pursuant to Water Code Section 13385. Next slide, please. During the 2021-2022 reporting period, Hixa Metal Finishing collected one storm event on March 28, 2022. As seen in Table 2, Hixa Metal Finishing received the analytical laboratory report on April 22, 2022, but did not submit the data in SMARTS until June 24, 2022, which was 63 days late. The report should have been submitted within 30 days of receipt of the laboratory report, which constitutes a serious violation and is also subject to a mandatory minimum penalty per Water Code Section 13385, Subdivision H. In Hixa Metal Finishing's brief, they stipulate the applicability of the late reporting violation. Next slide, please. Hixa Metal Finishing was issued a notice of intent to file suit by Orange County Coastkeeper on January 24, 2022 and February 23, 2022. On June 24, 2022, Hixa Metal Finishing submitted their monitoring late date, submitted their monitoring data late in SMARTS, which constituted a serious violation. A consent decree between Hixa Metal Finishing and Orange County Coastkeeper was entered on December 2, 2022, but Hixa Metal Finishing did not trigger their first TMDL numeric effluent limitation violation until February 24, 2023. Because of the incurred mandatory minimum penalties, Hixa Metal Finishing was issued an expedited payment letter on January 25, 2024, and then issued a revised expedited payment letter on October 3, 2024, for $45,000 for submitting a late monitoring report in SMARTS and exceeding the TMDL numeric effluent limitations for copper and zinc. On January 26, 2026, Hixa Metal Finishing was issued a mandatory minimum penalty complaint for $45,000 for the same violations. And now I'll pass the presentation on to our attorney, who will be speaking for the next few slides.
Good morning, Board Chair Scandura, members of the board. My name is Catherine Ha. I'm an attorney with the State Water Board's Office of Enforcement, and I'm counsel for the prosecution team today. Next slide. Based on the briefing submitted leading up to today's hearing, we know that the question of how citizen suits affect our enforcement actions is something the board is being asked to weigh in on today. As way of background, the prosecution team acknowledges that citizen suits play an important role in ensuring compliance with the Clean Water Act by allowing citizen groups to bring their own enforcement actions for violations. In particular, we want to emphasize that Orange County Coastkeeper, through its citizen suit efforts in this region, has often worked in alignment with our own agency's mission to improve water quality. However, citizen suits are not the same as the state's enforcement action, and the goals and priorities of those actions are not identical. Citizen suits generally do not include a payment of a civil penalty, but they do, as in the case here, often require the dischargers to install additional best management practices or BMPs at their facility. Ultimately, as outlined in our briefing, the law related to this issue is clear. Settlement with citizen groups does not preclude subsequent government enforcement. This is consistent with the policy considerations which underlie the citizen suit provisions of the Clean Water Act and the outcomes achieved through them. Requiring Hixon to pay the proposed MMPs today aligns with the legislature's requirement to enforce on violations of numeric effluent limitations contained in NPDES permits and the Clean Water Act's preference for government enforcement actions. Next slide, please. To be clear, Hixon argues in its briefing that the existence of its consent decree with Coastkeeper precludes the Santa Ana Water Board from imposing the MMPs alleged in today's complaint. However, the case law, statutory interpretation, and policy considerations do not support this position as outlined in more detail in our briefing. While there is an abundance of case law to support the position that the government can preclude a citizen suit from proceeding, no such case law exists to support the opposite position. This is because the government always retains its enforcement authority, even in the face of a citizen suit, consistent with the legislative history of these provisions, which demonstrate a preference for government enforcement actions. Also critical to this case is the Santa Ana Water Board and the prosecution team's continued interest in ensuring compliance with permit requirements. At the time of the complaint, Coastkeeper's complaint, and the consent decree, Hixson had not yet incurred any mandatory minimum penalties. And this facility is likely to continue to exceed applicable numeric effluent limitation requirements until the necessary BMPs are implemented. Removing enforcement tools from the state's toolbox based on an agreement with a third party is not appropriate. The water boards cannot be bound by a settlement agreement to modify the ongoing applicability of numeric effluent limitations when it was not a party to that settlement. Our staff was not asked to and did not weigh in on the resolution of the consent decree. Next slide, please. Based on these policy concerns, the MMPs alleged by the prosecution team in this matter must be imposed. As outlined in our opening brief, these are not discretionary penalties. Staff has already exercised its discretion to only recommend the MMP amount, but no additional flexibility exists to excuse these penalties. Hixson hasn't argued, and none of the statutory defenses apply to reduce the total liability. The prosecution team acted diligently to identify these violations through its typical process and treated Hixson the same as all other similarly situated dischargers enrolled in the industrial general permit. As you heard earlier, our staff has resolved 69 similar cases, and this matter before you today is the only remaining MMP case for industrial stormwater program in your region. Ultimately, our mandate pursuant to Water Code Section 13385 remains in place. MMPs provide an important enforcement tool to the water boards, ensuring that dischargers take necessary efforts to comply with numeric effluent limitations and work diligently to improve their BMPs when they are unable to comply with those NELs. Removing the requirement for Hixson is inconsistent with the legislative intent to make these penalties mandatory for all MPDS facilities and would unfairly bind the Santa Ana Water Board to a settlement agreement process in which it did not participate. With that, I'll turn it back to Ms. Diaz.
Next slide, please. Therefore, the prosecution team recommends that the Santa Ana Water Board adopt the proposed mandatory minimum penalty order number R8-2026-007 as drafted by the prosecution team and impose the mandatory minimum penalty amount of $45,000 on Hixson Metal Finishing. Thank you.
Okay. Vanessa, how much time is remaining for the prosecution team?
12 minutes.
Okay, 12 minutes. And then are there any questions from the board or the advisory team? And I'll start with the advisory team first. Council?
None at this time, Chair.
Same. From our board members, any questions from the board members? I'm seeing, I just have one question. So basically, the sole penalty for late submittal of or entry into the SMART system comes from the 2021-2022 calendar year, and that was 63 days late. Now, the majority of the sample results that we've seen before us come from the 2022-2023 calendar year. Were any of the, I seem to remember something in the order that those were also submitted late as well. Is that correct?
No. The monitoring reports from the 2022-2023 reporting period were submitted timely.
Okay, within the 30 days. Okay,
yes.
I must have misread something. Okay. Well, that's seeing no other questions. It is now for Hixson Metals to make their presentation.
Good morning, Chairman Scandura and members of the board. I'll make mine even briefer than the prosecution team. Hixson Metal Finishing admits readily that it exceeded the NELs that are at issue. That's not a question here. It also admits that it filed a late report. In fact, we are happy to resolve that. Pay the $3,000 for that issue. The real question comes up with regards to the consent decree. In the presentation that you just witnessed, there was a discussion about corrective measures that are built into a consent decree. including things such as BMPs. In the case of Hixson, they have or had a need to file a permit to for a design and implementation of a system to capture all of their stormwater. That's a fairly lengthy process that they had to go through in developing this. The consent decree was entered and signed by the judge in December of 2022. And the first NEL violations occurred in November of 22, just before the entry of the consent decree. The subsequent ones that we're seeking enforcement on occurred in February and March of 23, just a couple of months after the consent decree was entered, which had a detailed outline of performance to be done by Hixson Metal Finishing to build a system to control their stormwater. In the consent decree, which is provided to you as an exhibit, I believe it's Exhibit D that I provided, I cited to it, it's also cited in my opening brief, and it's very clear that under the consent decree, the values, which include the copper and the zinc, are not deemed a violation of the permit or this consent decree as long as Hixson continues to make timely and diligent efforts as required by the permit and herein to further reduce the level of pollutants of discharges. So effectively, a federally enforceable consent decree under the oversight of a federal judge was active and in place at the time in which these NEL violations occurred. It is our view that if the state believes that there are mandatory minimum penalties that should accrue, that they may have had an opportunity to intervene in this action at some point, which they have never done. And also, from our perspective, because it is being overseen and it was reviewed by the Federal Department of Justice, it followed all the requirements under the Clean Water Act for notification. The state had an ability to bring it and move forward in this action when the notices were originally given back in January of 22 and failed to do so. Failed to act at any time in between. It failed to act after the judge signed the consent decree, and then we get these minimum mandatory penalties, which are based upon serious violations, which under the code section reference the federal NEL requirements. So these federal requirements, we believe, pertain and are covered by this consent decree, and that the minimum mandatory penalties associated with these federally enforceable actions are not subject to the minimum mandatory penalties. Okay, and that's our presentation.
Okay, well, thank you. And Vanessa, how much time do they have remaining?
25 minutes and 37 seconds.
Okay, and are there any questions from the board or the advisory team? And again, I'll start with the advisory team first.
Yes, Chair, we have some questions. You point to sections of the consent decree that allegedly excuse the violations from the mandatory minimum penalties, and I believe that's paragraph 21 that's cited in the brief. I have a question. How do you reconcile that with paragraph 46, which talks about the effect of consent decree, which reads, nothing in this consent decree shall be construed to affect or limit in any way defendant's obligation to comply with all federal, state, and local laws and regulations governing any activity required by this consent decree. Compliance with this consent decree shall not be deemed to constitute compliance with the Stormwater Permit, the Clean Water Act, or any other law, rule, or regulation.
I did not view paragraph 46 as being applicable in the circumstances given that we had specific language that made a statement that did provide an excuse for Hixson Metal Finishing in a certain circumstance. As you are aware, we are not arguing anything with regards to the late reporting because we feel that is a state-specific enforcement mechanism which is not covered by the consent decree, unlike the NEL issue.
Okay, but do you disagree with what's written in the permit here in paragraph 46, as far as its references to the federal, state, and local laws and regulations, or the Stormwater Permit, or the Clean Water Act?
No, I don't disagree. I believe that we did comply with all federal, state, and local laws and regulations consistent with what the consent decree provided to us.
Thank you for that response. My subsequent question is there something that, other than the section that you've pointed out in paragraph 21 that talks about the effluent limitations and exceedances thereof, is there anything else in here that in the consent decree that you would argue binds the board from taking the action that it's trying to, that the prosecution team's proposing today?
I would say that the one thing that I would point out is that this is a federal consent decree signed by a federal judge under a federal judge's oversight. It was reviewed by the Federal Department of Justice for consistency and was approved.
Thank you. No further questions at this time.
Okay. Alan, no questions? Okay, I'll ask our board members. Board members, any questions for the prosecution, or for the, pardon me, for the Hixson Metals team? Seeing none, so I have a couple questions here. So, as I understand it, this consent decree was entered into back in December 2022, which was 3.5 years ago. It was also, I noted, about a month after the first sampling event where the NEL exceedances were occurred, which were covered in the table presented by the prosecution. In the 3.5 years since, well, first of all, let me ask this question. What kind of measures, best management practices, safety practices, were agreed to by Hixson Metals when they signed the consent decree?
Chairman Scandura, would you like that to come through testimony? Because I do have two witnesses that could help in that process as well.
I think whatever's effective in answering my questions. I just want to know what the BMPs were, other measures that.
Let me introduce the witness. Can you please state your name and confirm that you took the oath?
Hello, Bruce Green, Hixson Metal Finishing. Yes, I have taken the oath.
What is your title at Hixson Metal Finishing?
I am the Environmental Health and Safety Manager.
Can you provide a response to Chairman Scandura's question with regards to the BMPs and actions that you've taken?
Per the consent decree, there were a number of initial actions that we took, or BMPs that we implemented. Primarily was a step up of inspections of the facility, and the primary was also some replacement or repair of stormwater conveyance systems, and then also the introduction of a sweeper system. We refer to it as the Zamboni, but it's a riding sweeping system that would basically wash and collect any type of constituents that in the major walkways, production areas, and areas between the buildings.
Okay. Now, out of all those practices, I think you mentioned three of them. Which ones have been done to date, and which ones still need to be implemented?
Those initial BMPs have all been implemented. They have been implemented for, I believe they were implemented within 90 days of the consent decree, if I remember correctly. What we have been working on at this point is we decided to go a little bit above and beyond. We're actually introducing a system that will collect all of the rainwater that falls upon our facility. It'll then be filtered, stored, and then we will reuse it in our processes. So it's a recycling type system.
Is everything okay? Okay, good. So basically, you're implementing a rainwater installation system or collection system. This was also part of the consent decree. This was also agreed to in the consent decree?
Yes.
Okay. And what's the status? And that hasn't been implemented yet. What's the status of that?
The status of that at this point, we have actually just this week made what we believe will be our final submittal to the city of Newport Beach to get the permits to build that system.
Okay. Those are my questions. So at this point, how much time for clerk, how much time is remaining in the for the prosecution team?
12 minutes and 34 seconds.
Okay. And if the prosecution team would like to make a rebuttal, you have 12 minutes to do so.
I think we would be prepared to make our closing now, if I am not stepping out of order. Or I'll just say a couple of things just directly in response to what was just provided via testimony and from Mr. Pomeroy. So I want to clarify the timeline, which is in January of 2022, the notice of intent to file suit was filed by Coastkeeper, and the consent decree was entered into later that year, December of 2022. The first numeric effluent limitation violation that's alleged in today's complaint occurred on February 24th, 2023. It is accurate that there are sampling dates prior to the February 24th, 2023 included in the complaint because they provide the context and background to assessing mandatory minimum penalties, but the first date of violation is clearly after the consent decree was entered into, and our staff has been diligently prosecuting this item since January of 2024, during which Hickson has been on notice that we intended to impose these penalties. So it's been a long journey to get to the board today, but I wanted to clarify that timeline. And just one very minor note on the best management practices, we acknowledge the work that Hickson is doing in order to come into compliance with the permit, but all of the minimum BMPs that were just discussed are required by the permit in addition to being required by the consent decree.
Okay, so Hickson Metals has 25 minutes to make a rebuttal.
Yes, like to bring up a witness. Yes, you can step out. She taking the oath. Oh, you can go here. What are you going to do there? Fine. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
All right. Could you provide your name and whether you've been sworn in?
Yes. Hi, my name is Sarah Spinuzzi. I'm the legal director of Orange County Coastkeeper, and I have taken the oath.
Okay. Can you provide us a little bit of a background with regards to the Coastkeeper's actions with Hickson?
Yes. Orange County Coastkeeper began investigating Hickson Metal Finishing for violations of their NPDES permit back in 2020. We sent a notice of intent to file suit. That notice letter is statutorily required to be sent to the regional board, the state board, the United States Department of Justice, and the party. The purpose of that statutory notice period is, of course, to allow the Regional Water Quality Control Board or the State Water Board or the Department of Justice to basically moot our claim and file over us.
So can you tell me a little bit about the process of the negotiating the agreement with Hickson?
Yeah, so back in, it was 2022, right?
Yes.
Sorry, it's been a long time. Back in 2022, once Hickson Metal Finishing received our notice letter, we were contacted by Mr. Pomeroy, counsel for Hickson Metal Finishing, and they were immediately cooperative, invited us on site for a site inspection, and we started engaging in settlement negotiations. We were able to negotiate the consent decree that has been attached for your review as an exhibit. And part of all of our consent decrees We require implementation of best management practices. So instead of simply paying a penalty and continuing to pollute, we require that any of the defendants in our cases are required to actually implement best management practices that will fix their problems over the long term. And in addition to that, they also have to pay an environmentally beneficial project payment, which is in lieu of civil penalties, which is allowed under the Federal Clean Water Act. Hixson paid $68,000 for the past violations that we presented in our notice letter. Of course, through the consent decree process, Hixson has the right to not admit any liability, but also to make that payment, but that is in lieu of civil penalties. In addition to that, the consent decree required Hixson Metal Finishing to, as you've heard already, implement what we think was actually very advanced and robust best management practices. Do you want me to stop there?
Can you describe a little bit about the advanced BMP that we were talking about, mentioning?
Yeah, so Hixson Metal Finishing is located in the Upper Newport Bay watershed. They are subject to numeric effluent limitations, as you've heard, and meeting their copper requirements is very difficult. They are not allowed to discharge in excess of 0.005 milligrams per liter, which is an incredibly difficult standard to meet, which requires the implementation of advanced best management practices and advanced treatment system. We have been monitoring their compliance. We're also disappointed that they haven't been able to install that at this point. They are past both the preferred deadline and the extended deadline and the amended extended deadline that we had in our consent decree. Unfortunately, I believe that that is primarily due to the city of Newport's permitting processes. Hixson has been making diligent submittals to the city of Newport. I have been in direct communication with the city of Newport, and I'll just say that Hixson has made diligent efforts to get an advanced treatment system installed. I believe the first time that they were denied was because they didn't like the look of the tanks. They've had an incredibly challenging time with the city of Newport, to the extent that Coastkeeper had the ability to basically reopen negotiations and assess additional penalties, but we honestly felt like they were acting so diligently and that the city of Newport and their refusal to issue a permit has essentially resulted in a force majeure event.
Can you tell me how the minimum mandatory penalties that are being considered today affect your process for the citizen suit?
My position is that mandatory minimum penalties are mandatory, but there, before you get to mandatory minimum penalties, you also have enforcement discretion. And if the Regional Water Quality Control Board is coming in after we settle cases and assessing additional penalties for the same violations, it makes it very difficult for us to settle cases, to get these advanced BMPs, to get environmentally beneficial project payments in lieu of civil penalties. It becomes very difficult because defendants basically have this outstanding liability and they're not able to have final closure on how much liability they may have. I don't agree that penalties are mandatory in this case. I believe that if the Water Board had wanted to enforce, even after the consent decree was entered into, they could have filed a motion to intervene. That's what the 60-day notice period is for.
That's all I have.
Thanks.
Okay. All right. So we've had our we had the presentations by both the prosecution and Hixson Metals. We've had rebuttals to each presentation. And now, Vanessa, do we have any interested person comments? And each person is limited to just 3 minutes.
We do not have no comments at this time.
Okay. I'd like to ask the board my fellow board members if they have any further questions. Board Member Clark.
Yes, I do have a question about the communication from the City of Newport. Could you provide any more details about their response of why the permit might be delayed? We kind of got some vague responses, but anything in detail?
Yeah, over the period since, from our initial design, our initial submittal to the city, which I believe was in the August timeframe of 2023, I believe it was. We've submitted to the city approximately 9 times so far. And each time there was a number of different reasons that it was kicked back. Some of them, of course, because our engineers may have missed some things, so on and so forth. But also, the one comment that was made, the height of the tanks was discovered after we had gone through and done a number of different changes, thinking that those tanks had been approved. And then they had come back and said, I'm sorry, we made a mistake, that the tanks are actually too tall. So we had to go to a different size tank, and we had to move those tanks further away from the property line, which caused essentially a redesign of all the plumbing systems, all the pumping systems, that all the ancillary type of equipment that had to go with that. So that's one case of it, but again, that has happened several times as we had gone through this process.
And was there only interaction with staff, or did it ever have to go further, to a commission or maybe to the city council?
We'd had several meetings with both their permitting staff, permitting technicians, permitting engineers. We've talked again to building department. We've talked to planning department, EMP, which is electrical, mechanical, plumbing. We've had meetings with a number of people at the city of Newport Beach. We believe that we are finally there. The only comment that we had from this week's submittal was that unfortunately one of our engineers had forgotten to sign one of the pages, but we can get that taken care of, and we should have that, hopefully have those permits in hand within the next couple of weeks.
Did you have any costs estimated of what it took to go back and forth to finally get to this point?
Yeah, we've overall our engineering, architectural fees, permit fees, so on and so forth, are, my best guess at this point in time, are approximately $197,000.
Okay, thank you.
And that is in addition to approximately roughly $190,000 that we paid to Coastkeepers, and then also to other environmental groups such as the Newport Bay Conservancy and the Rose Foundation in our settlement for the consent decree.
Any other questions from the board members? I just have one, and this is really for the staff. So for our staff, 2020, we have before us the results from 2022, 2023. There's been two rainy seasons. And have we seen NEL exceedances of copper or zinc or lead in those two rainy seasons?
I'll answer briefly first, and then if more information is required, Ms. Beckwith can provide some testimony on this topic. But the short answer is no. There have not been numeric effluent limitations during those wet weather seasons, primarily because the discharger has not been conducting adequate sampling in order to incur mandatory minimum penalties. So they, in fact, received an NOV on that topic recently. I think it's outside the scope of today's hearing, okay. But the short answer is no, there are no additional outstanding MMPs. Going forward, that may change, but for today's matter, this will resolve all of the historic MMPs.
And did Ms. Beckwith wish to make a... Okay. All right. Okay. Council has some questions.
Thank you, Chair Scandura. this is for anyone on Hickson Metal Finishing this team. How long is the duration of the consent decree, including all the extensions that were just mentioned by the witness, Ms. Fanuzzi?
I guess I can answer. It's in the original consent decree. It's basically 3 years after the final implementation, so it's still continuing.
So we haven't started getting into the 3 years of the consent decree, so it potentially could be 3 years from now or longer.
Correct. But with it's our belief that once we have a full capture system, we're not going to have an issue anymore.
Okay, so consistent with your arguments you're making today, is it your interpretation of the consent decree that any exceedances that were to come during the duration of that consent decree would not be subject to MMPs?
The hypothetical that you provided isn't based on the facts. And since we don't have any facts that support that position, we believe right now that the only thing at issue are the MMP question that we're dealing with, which is over 3 years old.
And those are the ones that have occurred since the entering of the consent decree in
December.
Yes,
within 3 months of the entry of the consent decree, correct.
Okay, and then I have a follow-up question for Ms. Spinduzzi. Same question that I had previously proposed prior to your testimony. What is your interpretation, or what's your organization's interpretation of paragraph 46 regarding the scope of the consent decree?
Yeah, I think that that's a very interesting question. I think that the most analogous situation would be where the Water Board issues a time schedule order and a particular discharger may have a certain amount of time to follow the consent decree and to implement additional measures. And then if they don't comply with that, then of course they're not in compliance with the time schedule order and they're not in compliance with, you know, in this case, the consent decree. So really the analogy is, are you complying with the court order? And if the answer to that question is no, then you're not excused from enforcement. But if you are following the terms of the consent decree, then there is ongoing jurisdiction. So the federal judge, this is still an open case, even though it's extremely old at this point. This is still an open case. The regional board could actually still file a motion to intervene. They could still assess civil penalties in the course and scope of the federal enforcement action.
Is there a basis for that interpretation as far as, you know, what the board could do if it wanted to impose MMPs? It sounds like you're saying that they still could, but they would have to take some additional action that's referencing the current court case. And I just want to know if there's some authority that you're citing for that, or if it's just your observation.
Well, the purpose of the citizen suit provision and the 60-day notice period is to allow the board to bring an enforcement action. And so I wouldn't argue that the Water Board doesn't have any type of enforcement authority at any point in time. They can, of course, bring an enforcement action. I think the proper thing to do would be to intervene in our case. But no, I don't have like a pin site for you.
Thank you.
Okay. Any further questions from the board or from the advisory team?
None from the advisory team.
Okay. Sure. Board Member Mary.
So forgive me if this has been addressed, but is there a reason why we didn't intervene as an agency? Can I have some clarity on that?
I'll attempt to answer. So first of all, I think in general, and I'm not prepared to speak eloquently on the topic today, but I think in general we agree that the water boards would have a permissive right of intervention in the citizen suit. But as a matter of practice, we would generally not exercise that right. It is accurate to say that one of the purposes of the notice of intent that Coastkeeper is required to file prior to filing its suit is to provide notice to the regional boards and to allow us to exercise exclusive enforcement domain. For certain cases where we have a very high interest in how the matter gets resolved, we do exercise that and we intervene to preclude the citizen suit and prevent it from moving forward. I think all of the parties are in agreement that that's something that the prosecution team theoretically could do in a different case. We would not have been able to do it timely in this matter because there were no mandatory minimum penalties, at least based on the effluent limitations that are in dispute today, that would have been in existence at the time of that notice of intent being filed. So that's the primary reason why nothing was done in response to the notice of intent for this particular matter. And I do want to highlight what I think is another important purpose of the notice of intent. Its exclusive purpose is not to provide notice to the regional board that now is your opportunity to act or not act. It serves an additional purpose, which is to provide notice to the discharger that it is allegedly out of compliance with the Clean Water Act. Citizen suits can only proceed when there are ongoing violations. So if the discharger corrects the conditions of noncompliance identified in the notice of intent, it can also preclude the citizen suit from moving forward. So there's a dual purpose there that I think it's important for the board to understand. And again, primarily the reason why we would not have been able to act at the time of the notice of intent in January of 2022 is because these violations hadn't occurred yet. And as a matter of policy, our decision as to whether to act or not is not reflective of our position as to whether or not we retain enforcement discretion separate from the citizen suit. The legal authorities by which we pursue today's action and all of our enforcement throughout the state of California is all based on state law. It's different authority than what the citizen groups proceed under the Clean Water Act.
Good. Any other questions? Okay. And now we move into closing statements. Vanessa, how much time does the prosecution team have for their closing statement?
11 minutes and 18 seconds.
Okay. And for Hicks and Metals?
23 minutes and 19 seconds.
Okay. So does the prosecution team have a closing statement?
Yes, and I'll go ahead and get right into that. So thank you, Board Chair Scandura, and members of the board, for your time this morning and your attention to this matter. As our staff have explained, this is not a discretionary enforcement action. Instead, the action is before you today because the legislature requires our staff to bring penalties for certain kinds of violations of NPDES permits. Like all of our enforcement, this action is a function of state law. The NPDES program has been delegated to the state of California, and all of the enforcement authority we rely on to carry out that delegation is based on state legal authority. And here, that law requires the imposition of mandatory minimum penalties. Because Hixson is a facility regulated by the Industrial General Permit and is subject to the TMDL-related numeric effluent limitation requirements, and has failed to comply with those limitations. I do want to address some of the discussion that's come up today on the issue of finality. There is admittedly a gap between when the MMPs occurred and the regional board first made an attempt to settle these alleged violations. However, the Industrial General Permit is a self-reporting program, so Hixson could have assessed its own compliance at any point in time prior to our issuance of the settlement offer, the complaint, or at any point in time during the consent decree negotiation process. Staff do not have exclusive domain over calculating mandatory minimum penalties, and we rely on the regulated community to understand and know their compliance at any given time. With that said, the application of mandatory minimum penalties is a relatively straightforward analysis. Staff explained today how they review the monitoring data submitted by dischargers to assess compliance with applicable numeric effluent limitations. The process is the same for all other dischargers enrolled in the industrial stormwater permit who have NEL compliance obligations. In this instance, the data showed that Hixson incurred a total of 14 numeric effluent limitation exceedances and one additional MMP for late reporting, which Hixson stipulates to the applicability of. This liability is mandatory. Unlike our discretionary enforcement, we don't consider culpability or a discharger's level of cooperation. Instead, the applicability of these penalties is driven simply by what's contained in the lab reports submitted by the discharger to our board. Moving on to citizen suits. I addressed this a moment ago, but I'll mention it again. It is true that the regional board received a copy of the notice of intent to file suit, and that in some instances we do intervene by issuing our own enforcement action to preclude the citizen suit from moving forward. However, we are not required to do so. Another important purpose of the NOI is to give the discharge an opportunity to correct its ongoing noncompliance. Ultimately, the government and citizen groups are not on equal standing when it comes to enforcing violations of the Clean Water Act. The Water Board's legal requirement to bring these MMPs before you today is independent of the authority a citizen group has to bring its own action. And while citizen suits play an important role in ensuring water quality throughout the region, they do not supersede the state's authority to enforce water quality regulations. And they shouldn't prevent state agencies from bringing their own enforcement actions. Citizen suits and their associated settlements cannot and should not change the regulatory requirements of a generally applicable statewide permit with thousands of enrollees for a single facility without input from the regional board, especially not in cases like this where consent decrees were entered into prior to the discharger incurring MMPs. Hickson should not be exempted from these penalties, which dozens of similarly situated dischargers have paid in this region because of an agreement with a third party. With all that said, the prosecution team's recommendation is to adopt the proposed order as drafted by the prosecution team and to impose the MMPs alleged in the complaint. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And does Hickson Metal Finishing have a closing statement? If so, yes, 23 minutes.
Yes, I have quite a few minutes. I'm not going to use them all. Thank you. I just want to go back. I mean, we can all agree, and Hickson agrees, that there was an exceedance of the NELs. The NELs are based on the TMDLs. They're identified as a serious violation in California law using the applicable federal regulations and statutes. California's authorized to move forward with its stormwater permit, but that's all based on the Federal Clean Water Act. The state had an opportunity, the Water Board had an opportunity to bring an action, and it did not do so. 69 out of 70 parties have settled these MMPs, but I would imagine there's 69 other parties that don't have consent decrees, such as Hickson has, nor the circumstances that Hickson has under its consent decree, including the language which identifies that it will not be a violation of the permit to have these exceedances. If it is not a violation of the permit, then it cannot be a violation of state law because the permit does not apply. The MMPs do not apply. So for our purpose, we believe that Hickson's actions were, in fact, exceedances of the NELs. That is a federally enforceable provision. We're not arguing over the state enforceable provision, which is the late reporting. It has nothing to do with the federal requirements. And therefore, we accept that as something that Hickson is responsible for. So from our perspective, it's Hickson's conclusion that under the consent decree, the MMPs are not applicable in this case, and that the state proceeding to enforce MMPs in this situation has a chilling effect on citizen suits and future citizen suit activity.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. So we have now had presentations by both the prosecution team as well as by the defendant. We have had opportunities for rebuttals by both of the parties, for board members and the advisory team to ask questions, and finally for both parties to make a closing statement. And so at this time, I declare this public hearing to be closed. Now, at this point, we have the option to either continue our discussion here in open session or to go to a closed session. So I'd like to ask my fellow board members if you want to discuss now in the open session or if there's a wish to go into closed session to consider the evidence received and deliberate on a decision.
I'd like to request to go to closed, if possible.
Okay. I see some other nodding heads, and so I ask our counsel to read a statement.
Thank you, Chair.
First of all, I have to say I recommend to my fellow board members we adjourn to closed session.
Pursuant to Government Code Section 11126, Subdivision C3, the board will now go into closed session to deliberate on this matter. We will reconvene when we have completed our... Well, the board will reconvene when it has completed its deliberations. The board will meet in closed session to discuss item number 8 for the deliberation on a decision to be reached based on evidence introduced at the hearing. Thank you.
We just need a couple minutes. We're trying. Okay, we are hooked up then. Okay. Okay, well, I call us back into open session, and I appreciate everybody's patience and waiting for us as we debated and deliberated and discussed the action before us today. It is the decision of the Santa Ana Regional Water Quality Control Board to adopt the staff's recommendation to impose the $45,000 penalties for the violations that are cited in the order, including the late submittal of the report and then the 14 exceedances of the NEL. We also have changes to the order that we intend to make, and I'd like to ask our counsel to read those changes into the record. Also, you will be able to see them up on the screen as well.
Thank you, Chair. And I will just quickly read through these proposed changes for adoption. First are the changes shown to the caption and the preamble, and I'll leave these on here for a second. Changes shown in the header. The clarification in paragraph 3, as shown in the track changes in blue. The addition of paragraph 15, which reads, discharger does not dispute that the alleged NEL exceedances and reporting violation occurred. The additions shown in paragraphs 25 and 26. Apologies. One correction made to that. So the additions are adding to paragraph 25 the word and before the applicable law, and then at the end of the sentence finds that the discharger is liable for the violations alleged in the complaint. Paragraph 26, which adds, the Santa Ana Water Board further finds that. In order 2, the addition of with ACLO R8-2026-0007 in the memo line. And the changes shown in the certification. And additional non-substantive grammatical and formatting changes. And with that, I pass that back to the chair.
Okay. Thank you very much, counsel. We can then have a motion, and then we'll have board discussion. So do I have a motion to approve issuance of the orders with the penalties and the changes covered that were made just before us?
So move.
Okay. So moved by Vice Chair Alvarado and seconded by Board Member Murray. And now we have board discussion. And I'd like to start with Board Member Lopez, Clark. Any others? I'll just say I'd like to say just a couple things, and hopefully this reflects the kind of discussions that we had and the decisions we made. You know, first of all, I want to express my appreciation to the Orange County Coast Keeper for taking the initiative to identify these discharges that occurred from the Hickson facility and to take an action which culminated in a consent decree which requires Hickson to implement a number of practices. I also appreciate Hickson's efforts to try to implement a number of these practices that will hopefully control all of these discharges. However, none of us could buy into the notion that a citizen's lawsuit, a third-party lawsuit, would preclude this agency or any agency from taking enforcement action. I have worked for and as a consultant to regulatory agencies for 45 years. And in all the enforcement actions I've ever been involved with, I have never heard a party say, you can't take an enforcement action because somebody already sued us, you can't touch us. First of all, citizens' lawsuits in Clean Water Act as well as RCRA and in CERCLA, they were intended to augment agency actions, particularly where regulatory agencies are spread thin and can't be able to address all the actions that can be taken out there. But they were never intended to replace the regulatory agency or to prohibit regulatory agencies from exercising their own regulatory authority. The big thing that we discuss is the fact that if we buy into the arguments made by Hickson and not impose the penalties, this would have a precedent not only on this board, but all eight of our regional boards, plus the State Water Resources Control Board. And the legislature and Congress never intended for these lawsuits to prohibit agencies from exercising their own independent enforcement authority. So it's important that we continue with this enforcement action. There were violations. There were exceedances of copper and zinc that went into the upper Newport Bay. Hickson does not contest those violations. I might add something. One of the constituents that was discharged into the bay was copper. 2.5 years ago, we approved total maximum daily loads and all the best management practices that go along with them for copper in Newport Bay. And what these TMDLs will be doing is forcing all the boat owners in Newport Bay to implement practices, very drastic practices, to either control or eliminate copper from going into the bay because it presents an enormous ecological threat in the bay. And needless to say, that has not been popular at all with the city of Newport Beach, and let alone all the different parties that are involved in that. But for this board to implement these very drastic measures, but then look the other way when we have a facility that's also discharging copper into the bay, we can't do that. We have to control all of those discharges. So, you know, appreciate the testimony that was presented before us, but we believe that we need to go forward with this order and the penalties. So with that, we've had a motion and a second, and Vanessa, can we have the roll call vote?
Board Member Lopez?
Aye.
Board Member Clark?
Aye.
Board Member Murray?
Aye.
Board Member Rue?
Aye.
Vice Chair Alvarado?
Aye.
Chair Scandura?
Aye.
Motion passes.
And this now concludes our enforcement hearing, and so we're going to go back to our regular meeting. We'll need a little bit of time for all the parties to leave, as well as for our executive officer to return to his place right next to me. It'll take about a minute or two for that. So we have two more items. First is of our board member and executive officer communications. And then last of all, we have a special ceremony honoring our two outstanding staff. So do we have any board member communications? Start with me. Okay. And Eric, anything to communicate to the board?
No, not at this time.
Okay. Well, the last item, and this is a special announcement, and one of the things I don't miss from my days of being a manager and a supervisor is, you know, recognizing staff, because when you have a lot of exceptional staff, it becomes very difficult to want to point out people that, you know, really do outstanding work. And this water board in particular has just outstanding staff, and I made that comment a little bit earlier when in reference to the baseball remarks and to some players who have long since retired, that I feel that they're like the Shohei Ohtani of regulatory agency staff. But we have two staff whose work has gone above and beyond that deserve recognition for sustained superior accomplishment. And this is a very important recognition within state government service. And the two of them are Caitlin Diaz, and I think there's Caitlin, and we've already heard from her before, and then many times we've heard from Claudia Tenorio. And so with that, let's see, our Caitlin's supervisor would like to say a few words. So Michelle Beckwith is her supervisor, and
good morning, board members. Thank you for taking the opportunity to award such a special award and to get the recognition for all the work that staff do. So Caitlin Diaz has demonstrated outstanding performance and leadership through her work in the General Stormwater Unit. She has played a key role in advancing TMDL, numeric effluent limitation enforcement, ensuring regulated facilities meet permit requirements, and supporting the Water Board's mission to protect water quality. Her strong analytical skills and perseverance has helped move complex compliance issues forward while maintaining a fair and consistent regulatory approach. In addition to her enforcement work, Caitlin has been an invaluable mentor to her unit staff, generously sharing her knowledge and providing guidance on stormwater requirements, enforcement processes, and case development. Her willingness to support colleagues has strengthened the team's capacity and fostered a collaborative work environment. Caitlin is also known for her exceptional attention to detail, carefully reviewing technical and regulatory information to ensure accuracy and consistency in enforcement actions and communications. This diligence improves the quality and defensibility of the unit's work. Finally, Caitlin consistently represents the Water Board with professionalism, with interaction with permittees, stakeholders, and colleagues. Her clear communication, thoughtful approach, and commitment to public service reflect positively on the organization to help build trust with the regulated community. Through her technical expertise, mentorship, and professionalism, Caitlin has made significant contributions to the effectiveness and success of the General Stormwater Unit. Thank you.
Okay, Caitlin, well, thank you very much for all the work you've done for this agency, especially all of your work on these very, very tough enforcement cases. All of us appreciate how difficult this work is and what it takes to be able to bring these actions forward. Now we also have another outstanding staff person. That's Claudia Tenorio, and I'd like to ask her supervisor, Jagrup Kala, who's the manager of the Planning and Implementation and Permitting Branch, to say a few words about Claudia.
Good afternoon, Board Chair Scandura and members of the board. It is my honor to recognize Claudia Tenorio, recipient of the 2026 Sustained Superior Accomplishment Award. This award is reserved for employees who consistently perform at an exceptional level over an extended period of time. Claudia exemplifies that standard in every respect. I've been her supervisor for the last 3 years, and I have seen her growth and grow in the leadership role, and I have certainly witnessed that. As supervisor of our regional planning and 401 dredge and fill program, Claudia has successfully led one of the region's most complex and demanding programs during a period of significant regulatory change and increasing workload. Her leadership was especially critical following up the US EPA's SACA decision, when she quickly adapted program implementation, ensured regulatory continuity, and maintained strong protection of waters of the state. Over the past several years, she has overseen hundreds of 401 dredge and fill applications and numerous regulatory actions while maintaining high technical quality, timely decision-making, and regulatory consistency. At the same time, she has strengthened our organization by mentoring staff, building program capacity, advancing the basin plan initiatives, and fostering a culture of collaboration, accountability, and excellence. What distinguishes Claudia is not only her technical expertise, but her unwavering commitment to public service, her professionalism, and her ability to lead through change while supporting those around her. Her sustained contributions have strengthened our programs, enhanced environmental protection, and advanced the mission of the Water Boards. Claudia, congratulations on this well-deserved recognition, and thank you for your outstanding service to the people of California. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Claudia, and you're well known to us. We're familiar with all the work that you've done. We also recognize that it's very complicated work, and you've done an outstanding job. And so what I'd like to do, I'd like to ask Claudia and Caitlin, their supervisors, to come forward. And then if we could get all the board members and our executive officer all for one big group photo, and then we'll go ahead and adjourn the meeting.